John's Big Audio Dynamite. Whenever I'm in Stony Brook, I listen to WUSP.
Solid wagon, man, it's a show. Take it to a place where the healing's all gone. Oh, it's been there. We got the juice. Won't take it sold in a shiny juice.
And this is radio station W... Did he say WUSP? I think he... Kyle, I think you said WUSP. That's why we got to get Mick Jones back here to say it right.
I'm the worst at karaoke.
It's WUSB Stony Brook. And we are about to embark on a three-hour journey through America on a special edition of Off the Wall. Stay tuned. Pretty good. This is unusual. We're at the bottom of a volcano. Intentionally, we didn't have an accent or anything like that. Could have very easily. It's driving up the side of a volcano is not for the faint of heart. I'll tell you that right now. This is the Tapalin volcano. I believe is how you pronounce it. In New Mexico, we were just driving down the road, having just left Colorado. We'll get into where we've been in a moment, but we just saw this marker on the side of the road said, Tapalin Volcano National Park or National Monument or something like that. So we drove a few miles down the road, and sure enough, National Park, paid an admission fee for the vehicle, and then went up the volcano. You got to be in the passenger side, so you got to look over the edge.
Oh, I didn't do any of that. I looked straight ahead.
Well, you kept commenting on how high up we were, so I just had the feeling that you were looking over the edge. When we last left you, where were we?
Oh, wow. That was in southern Oregon, I believe, right along the border with Idaho, southern Idaho or mid-Idaho.
See, I'm going to disagree and say that it was Washington. I think we were in Washington State. Our fact checkers can verify which one. I know we went to Oregon, and we stayed there. I might be misremembering. I thought we went at night, but we could have been in Oregon in the daytime as well, because we were by these train tracks, and it was really nice. So after we left you, we went to a place in Oregon to... do you remember the name of the town?
Ogden? No, that was...
That's Utah.
I'm not 100% sure what the name...
I thought we should have written this down. okay, so somewhere in Oregon, we forgot already where we stayed. But that enabled us to regroup and plan for the next day, which involved driving into Idaho. And, Idaho is different. It's not like Washington or Oregon. It's very windy down here, too, by the way, so we have to be careful not to have too much wind noise. But it's really, really windy on top. We went to Idaho. We went to Boise. And I actually like Boise. I think, I don't want to sound so shocked. There's no reason I shouldn't like Boise. It's a hip town is what I'm trying to say. A lot of activity going on. A lot of young people. It seems vibrant. A lot of places to eat. And I just came away with a really, really good impression.
Yeah, me too. There were very many kind of cool up-and-coming places. Lots of good food in the downtown area. But it just seemed sort of welcoming. But, of course, a lot of the uniquely kind of rural stuff and traffic, you know, there's a lot of people coming and going. You get the sense it's very busy in that way.
Well, one thing that struck us almost immediately when we came into Idaho after leaving Oregon. Apparently, the vaccine is over in Idaho. I mean, the virus is over in Idaho. They found a cure because nobody's wearing masks anywhere. We went into a place to grab a bite to eat. We were the only people wearing masks in the place. Everybody treated us very nicely, though, and they seated us, and we did see other people wearing masks a little bit later on, including some people who came into the place, but we just got the sense that this was very, very different, that the attitudes were very different here than in Washington State and in Oregon. Even in Oregon, I noticed that there wasn't as much mask wearing as in Washington State. In fact, even in the part of Washington that we stopped in on the first day, Moses Lake, there were less people wearing masks. So as you move further and further away from cities, I guess that's what happens. But Boise is a big city, and not very many people were wearing masks there. So it was kind of interesting to experience that.
And a lot of public health urging and notices, billboards, almost scaring people a little bit, like, you know, keep a space in the ICU for someone who needs it, you know, that kind of thing, kind of like tobacco, anti-tobacco campaigns. So it seems like, and even we saw some, like, road construction signs warning people about cases and stuff like that in the area. So there's a lot of efforts to get public information out. But from there, we just continued on, I believe.
Yeah. After we spent some time in Idaho, as you mentioned, there were a lot of signs on the roadway saying, you know, be vigilant and get your vaccine and things like that, which is good to see. I felt very welcome. I didn't feel like we were being ostracized because we were wearing masks, and you only wore a mask to walk into a place. And of course, when you're eating, you don't wear a mask. And outside, you don't really need to wear them. But we just wanted to be as careful as possible. So then, after Boise, we headed into Utah. Boy, that's when things really got different, because Utah is a very religious state. If you thought that COVID wasn't a thing in Idaho, it really isn't a thing in Utah. So it's just very windy right now. I want to make sure that our audio is completely wiped out. So we stayed in a place called Ogden, Utah, which basically we just saw on the map. This is about how far we can get in one day's driving. And we made it to Ogden. Basically, I don't know what we can say about the place. We just felt like we were in a very alien environment.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like a fair amount of time ago, and you have other stops along the way. We're just building in all these different staple places that seem big enough to be able to accommodate and get us to the next point in our journey, and it just seemed like another place that people were staying over. I don't exactly even remember which place we were in, and that's generally what we remember about a place we stay at night, is where we stayed. But they're, you know, we're moving up by road, so you start experiencing the same kind of accommodations, and it kind of blurs a little bit.
Well, the motels, hotels that we pick out, basically they are pretty similar. You basically find something as you're driving and say, yeah, this works, and then you wind up cursing at your phone for the next 20 minutes because you don't have any network and you can't book the room, and then you're getting the wrong rates for the wrong days, and it takes a long, long time. But we were able to do this and find a place and experience that particular part of Utah. Everything is so religious there. Everything on TV, everything on radio. And I want to get into, you know, what we've been hearing as we drive, maybe a little bit later. But when we got up the next day, prepared to continue our drive, we went to a coffee shop that was fairly nearby. It happened to be right next to, of course, a church that just let out, a church in a shopping center. And so had to stand in line in this coffee shop. And, of course, we were the only ones wearing masks. And, you know, we felt like oddities. We felt like, you know, strange people standing there with masks. But, again, nobody made us feel bad. I think we were doing that on our own. But we definitely stood out. But, again, everybody was, oh, boy, very windy now. everybody was very nice to us, but you got the sense that there's a very different mindset here. All the stickers and posters on the wall saying things like, if you don't stand behind our troops, feel free to stand in front of them, and but nothing overtly political. You know, that basically you had signs in a coffee shop too. You had signs saying, "We're not Democrats or Republicans, but we believe this particular thing," which I forget what it was exactly. Lots and lots of things like that. So it was an experience. You know, we felt uncomfortable, but we didn't feel like we were in danger. And I'm sure that everybody there was extremely nice and friendly, and we could have a good conversation with them under normal circumstances.
Yeah, and a lot of people were like workers and contractors and things like that moving through the area. A lot of Texas plates and stuff like that. And it just seemed, I really try. Like, the local coffee place is a good measuring standard, I think. And you can get a real feel for what's important to a town and, you know, how they're doing with, in certain cultural aspects, you know, what you can expect, what the conversation is at the coffee place or the local breakfast stop. And then we got further afield. We heard some like nutritional radio, and we're scanning around a lot. And then I think we were on our way to the Mexican Hat.
Yeah, and I want to thank listener Ryan for suggesting that. I know we said we'd record things in the places that we went to. It felt wrong to record anything at Mexican Hat. I keep mixing up the Canadian town with what this monument is. It was so incredibly quiet there. Any sound whatsoever, anything that we did, just would have seemed like sacrilege. When we got there, it was just the most amazing thing. Now, what Mexican Hat is, it's just a rock configuration, this massive rock on top of a not-so-massive rock. It looks like it's impossible to actually get in that particular configuration, but there it is. I guess it's kind of like our Stonehenge. But you see lots of monuments similar to that all around, and just you get a sense of the vastness and the solitude. Even though there are other people around in cars, like not far away, I don't think I've ever been anywhere so quiet.
Oh wow, the quiet is what struck me, and I was pretty stressed out driving through Utah. I had my phone failed, and I was in kind of a really sour mood, shall I say. I think you can attest to that.
A Mexican Hat, by the way, is in Utah.
Yeah. And so I was, when we got there, you were pushing yourself. You had driven a really long way, and I just got out, and there was, like, one other person walking a dog up top. And I had expected it. I kind of over blew it in my mind. Like, it was, like, built up as something really big. But it's much smaller. It's still amazing the way it balances. And it basically looks like a sombrero upside down balancing.
And you feel like you're just on the set of 2001, A Space Odyssey, right at that moment. The silence, the nature, just all of that is it's just simply incredible, and something that it just moves you, and it's impossible to capture that on radio. It's just this incredible structure in the middle of what you might call nowhere, but it's Earth, you know, it's nature. And I just felt compelled to walk up a hill and just experience it from a different angle, and it just felt like it was timeless, like it was something that we were very privileged to see. It's something that was completely unspoiled. Now, yeah, you mentioned I was really driving myself. I was driving the both of us, obviously. But we had looked at the time that it took to get from Ogden to Mexican Hat, and it was basically would have gotten us there right before sunset. And we really wanted to see it before sunset because there's no light. You have to see it before sunset. So it was a little stressful getting there, but we did.
And I saw a lot of infrastructure projects along the way, but which is worth mentioning, like fiber optics and telecommunication stuff, which was really cool. We went through Moab, which is a really big outdoor hiking and just all kinds of sports, mountain biking capital and these kinds of things. So it was cool to go to this place, which was really in solitude, relative solitude, and see the sunset, because it was just changing color, and really just picturesque with along the horizon. I took a panoramic picture with this sort of cool disposable camera a friend gave me, or a family member I got as a gift. So that was a cool moment to take in that quiet. All I could hear is like some mild tinnitus, or I don't know, my ears ringing from not having noise of the city. And that's begun to continue. And I think the skyline as well, with stars and stuff, the light has created more space for quiet and your like presence for the beauty of the moment.
So that was one place that we went to, which was really pretty awesome. And then after that, we were kind of stressed out at that point, because then we had to find some place to stay, and we really were in the middle of nowhere. I mean, we had good signal at Mexican Hat for some reason, but we had to figure out where to stay the next day, or until the next day. And we kind of had this feeling that, hey, we don't know where we are. I mean, we knew where we were, but where do we go from here? We're so far away from any major town. So we just kept driving and passing really small places. And then we went through, I think, all these different borders in quick succession. That was that night, right? We Utah, then we suddenly were in, I believe, New Mexico. That only lasted for a couple of seconds. Then we were in Arizona. And then we were in Colorado. So I think we were near the Four Corners. We didn't actually make it to the Four Corners. But we kept driving around, and we picked the four. We picked New Mexico and wound up in a place called Farmington in New Mexico. And I got to say, Farmington was a mecca for us. Why? Because we had pretty much been driving all day without food, without drink, because we had to make it to this Mexican rock in order to see it. And there weren't really any options along the way. But when we got to Farmington in New Mexico, well, there were these motels, these really cheap motels, across the street from a Denny's, which is open 24 hours. And even though it's not my, you know, favorite place in the world, it definitely fed us and kept us alive. And we had another place to stay.
Absolutely. Sometimes you just have to kind of look for the best options, and you just hadn't had the time to put things together. The next day, we were able to plan a little bit more ahead to prepare us. And, yeah, going through all those states, it was really different. But
don't forget how hard it was for us to find coffee that morning in Farmington. We thought it would be easy, and it wasn't that easy. We were looking for, you know, one of those sit-down coffee places, but every one that we found was a drive-up place, and that didn't really do us any good. We wanted to have coffee in a car. We wanted to sit down and plan our day, and we went through all these ones that sounded like they were cool cafes. In fact, even the reviews said they were cool cafes, but it was just a drive-up. And then we found one that sounded perfect by a university, and we drove all around and tracked it down. And we found it, and it looked perfect. And we walked up to it, and it said closed Mondays. Yeah, I wasn't happy about that. There was another one that seemed to be inside a church, and we sort of, you know, felt like that probably wasn't right for us either. And then I said, you know, Kyle, Starbucks is acceptable. You know, a few years ago, for me, it wouldn't have been, but no, I can go to Starbucks. That's not a problem. And, yeah, there was one there, and it was perfect for us because we were able to go inside, sit down, and plan our day, and that's what we did. We planned our day in Colorado, we were in New Mexico at the time. We planned our day in New Mexico. We were in Farmington. I forget what we did after that.
Farmington, we continued on to Trinidad.
Trinidad, that's right. Not the Trinidad you're thinking of. The Trinidad that is in Colorado. Okay, so we did go to Colorado. We tried to go to a dispensary in New Mexico, because we're checking out all this along the way, how marijuana legalization has happened, and we saw these reviews for dispensaries in New Mexico. We decided to check one out, but again, the reviews aren't accurate. They said it's a great place if you want to mellow out for the weekend, come here. They didn't mention it's only medicinal at the moment. They're not going to be recreational until April. So we were disappointed again, walking up to a door and finding out that they're not going to be able to serve us until April. Not so in Colorado, though. We went to Colorado, very, very easy to get. And we forgot about the other place we went to in Colorado.
Exactly. We traveled along the Animas River, which we learned about, towards Durango, which is a really, really cool place. A little bit less active than Moab as far as outdoor stuff, but you get a real sense of people interested in all kinds of activity, and it's sort of nestled in a valley and has a sort of interesting history with this certain railroad.
Yeah, the narrow gauge railroad, which unfortunately was not open. It opens on November 18th, I think, which is probably after. Well, I don't know. Whatever it is, it's either after this airs or before this airs. It's not when it is now, so we weren't able to go on it. But we were able to see the train, and in fact, we even saw a train pass by with an engine and a caboose and nothing else. That was kind of cool. But Durango is this kind of hip place. You get a sense that it's kind of like a Woodstock. A lot of cool places, cool shops. Very, very comfortable. We felt very comfortable there, and could have spent a long time there, I think. And we found a dispensary there too, which was very nice, very cool. I bought a T-shirt there, in fact. And you know what? I forgot. But before we went to Durango, as we were leaving New Mexico, we visited the Aztec ruins, and that's kind of important.
Holy, I can't even believe we forgot. Yeah, we first.
This is why we have to record these things more often.
I know, we're like catching up and remembering as we skip ahead, and it's probably really hard to put together, but that was also before Durango, and right outside Fairmont.
Farmington.
I'm sorry, Farmington.
You kept correcting me on Farmington. I kept calling it Littleton.
Well, we were going to go to Shiprock, too, and Farmington is next to Shiprock.
Ain't nothing in Shiprock.
Well, yeah, there's some small communities, I think some native areas in different parts of it, but we needed a little bit more.
Ain't nothing open at midnight in Shiprock.
Yeah, we weren't going to have much luck there. So this Aztec ruin is a national park, much like the one we're in now, it has a visitor center. Yeah, so it's the official monument for this certain kind of kiva. So these are indigenous communities that are descendant of the Aztecs. So it was not built necessarily by the Aztecs proper. And it's still used for various activities to this day. And, of course, the public is allowed to explore. And they have all of these series of buildings. And all the stonework is really, really old and is still there, 90% actually still intact. So they give you a walking guide, and we walked around that and just really explored and saw how it was being honored and recreated so people could learn about its uses and, how... important it is. And what I realized, my takeaway is that this is our history. This is our country's history. And being able to tell these stories and preserve it is really, really important. We should all feel some pride in how old this place is. It's beyond sort of the modern 200 years we think of when you really look at the land and how it was used by other peoples.
Yeah, no, very good point. But also we need to... make sure when we talk about our country, our land, realize that it is more than just what we are taught as far as 1776 and 1492 and years like that. It's much bigger than that. It's much more encompassing of many, many, many more people, and we need to acknowledge that and celebrate that and give it the recognition it deserves. But the ruins were incredible because you get to walk inside some of the structures, and to do that you have to kneel down and go through this little tiny doorway three, four times. And then you realize, wow, you're on the opposite end of this, and you have to go through all those again to get out. It's kind of a weird sense of claustrophobia that you have, and you realize that that's where you are at the moment. But then you basically get knocked over by the history of the place, realizing these stones have been here for so long, and they were crafted so carefully. And it's just an incredible place that you could easily drive by. In fact, we did drive by because we got our directions wrong, and we had to turn around and figure it out. But free admission there, so it was amazing and so worth it.
Absolutely, yeah. A lot of people visiting it, too, and learning. And it's so cool to see the subterranean structures, how cool it was, literally cool, being underground. And just The roofs, the beams and the structures with the roofing materials, the logs and stuff that were still intact after like 900 years or who knows how long. I mean, just incredible takeaway for how this artistic architecture and functional space for a community has endured.
Well, we're here at the bottom of a volcano. I apologize for the wind. Hopefully this is usable. If you're listening to this, and I deem that it is usable. But apparently at the bottom of a volcano, there's a lot of wind. Who knew?
Yeah, I expressly thought being down here, we'd be somewhat protected. But
I thought being at the bottom of a volcano, we'd be protected. Yeah, I mean, we're protected against a volcano because this thing's long dormant. It's grassy. A lot of rocks here, but if you think we're putting ourselves at risk of a volcano blowing up, no, we're not. Not at all. It's been millions and millions of years. We are at risk of rattlesnakes, though, we're told. There are rattlesnakes around, but they won't attack you unless you insult them. So let's just make sure we don't do that. We saw a couple of chipmunks. That's about the most ferocious wildlife I've seen. And some crows flying around. I see some humans up on the top of the rim there. We could take a walk all the way around the rim. That's a couple of miles, but I thought this was better to go all the way down to the bottom. But I realize now that we have to go all the way back up to the top. And since we're already in high altitude, I've been having just breathing issues. I mean, nothing serious, but I just realized it's harder to catch my breath because the cities we've been staying in have been, well, I thought 4,000 was high. Then it was 5,000. Last night it was 6,000. We drove on a mountain the other night. It was 10,000. So it's really something. And when you realize New York City is 33 feet, you know, that's what I'm used to. So it takes some acclimation to, you got to get used to these things. But it's so worth it. And what we're doing is, and thanks to all the listeners who have written in with suggestions, we're taking roads. I think we've been on the interstate maybe just a couple hours of this whole trip. And this is day five for us right now. But we're mostly on two-lane roads or maybe just federal roads. You know, we don't have any federal roads on Long Island. They look like state roads, but the symbol is slightly different. Like U.S. Route 1 is the closest thing we have. That doesn't go on Long Island. It goes through New York, though. But that's what we've been driving on, roads like that, or state roads or county roads to get places. And just stopping, seeing things that are interesting along the way, sometimes things that we didn't have any idea was there. We'll be talking more about that when we're less in danger of rattlesnakes and being blown away.
And I believe at one point we did something similar to this. One of our first trips to Iceland, we walked around the rim of a volcano and then around the bottom, and there was like a small pool of water. I'm not sure if we talked about that very much, but it's cool to try it again here in a different setting.
Yes, absolutely. So we basically are coming from Trinidad in Colorado. That's where we stayed last night. I don't know why it's called Trinidad. I should have looked that up. I don't think it has anything to do with the island nation. But it's another kind of cool town. Not quite as big as Durango or as hip. But definitely it's got this individualistic quirkiness. And we kind of like that. They have a long main street. And there's all kinds of interesting places to hang out there. So we spent a little bit of time there and headed out. Stopped at the volcano. And we're on our way to a place in Kansas called Liberal. Yeah, and we know nothing about Liberal right now. We're going to find out a lot about Liberal, but basically it's kind of in the direction we want to go, and it has a cool name, so why not?
Yeah, and Trinidad was interesting. It had like eight dispensaries on one side of the street. It just had all this kind of cannabis stuff, which I thought was interesting. It's, I guess, right next to the interstate there. I just wanted to talk about the theater that we saw. It's called The Fox. Now, we've seen a couple of Fox theaters. When we were driving in at night, there was a...
This is in Trinidad.
Correct. There's a Fox Theater in Trinidad, and there's another one. I don't know what town it was. We passed by it, and I think they were just playing films. This theater in Trinidad is very large, big stone building, and it was closed, abandoned. And I thought that was a little bit sad.
It said West Theater on the building. It said Fox Theater at the marquee and West Theater in the back.
That's right. It had a painted brick along the side. And the other feature that I noted when we passed, it was this very tall part in the back which is used for flying in sets. It's to raise and lower the curtain, as it were. That I don't know what it's called necessarily, but it's for doing productions where you're changing scenes using that height to pull them up. And of course, lighting and all that other production stuff is used that way. So it was sort of sad to see it closed in this way. It was like a massive, massive theater, and seemed like there was so much good possibility there. And I think you learned something about it.
Well, I looked it up on Wikipedia just to see what was going on. The West Theater in Trinidad, Colorado. And, yeah, it had existed for quite some time. It shut down a few years ago. Then was bought by the town. They got a grant, and they bought it, and there's a committee that's restoring it, and it's going to bring theater back. And that's the kind of thing that is so amazing. We see that in Long Island all the time. We see theaters that are either being closed down or trying to be saved. We have theaters in Smithtown and Port Jefferson, Sag Harbor, all over the place. We have theaters, Riverhead. And it's just an incredible thing to preserve, and so, so important. I think people realize that everywhere. So we were heartened to see that in a place so far away. And hopefully we see more things like that.
Absolutely. Those are places of, storytelling, and it's a cultural outlet. It's some place that people get to work on their craft, to build a experience in creative arts and all that community that people can get around a simple production, and it brings together that locals and people from out of town alike to share an experience. And a lot of that stuff is coming back in the larger cities, so it's cool to see some activity at the super local level.
We have so much more to talk about as far as what we've been listening to on the radio and just culture in general, but we're going to go now because we have to hit the road. We have to climb up the inside of this volcano. Well, we're not hiking up the side of a volcano. There is a path, but we do have to get to the top, and we're at the bottom right now, and I'd like to get back to the car because I thought I heard the car alarm going off. No, we're fine. I'm more worried about the rattlesnake and all the scorpions and things like that. But we're on our way to Liberal, Kansas. We'll see how that works out, and we'll check in later. Hopefully this wind doesn't carry us away. We could use the wind to heighten ourselves and get up to the top.
Yeah, like if we had like sort of a squirrel suit or like some kind of paragliding windsurfing rig.
We never plan these things out. Next time.
And we are back live in the WUSB studios, or the substitute for the WUSB studios. Kyle, that was something. Hiking up a hiking down a volcano, and hiking back up later.
It's so always such a riot, like trying to go back and recount things in the most seemingly comfortable, but sort of also uncomfortable ways, like just to catalog it and find some time, and then you realize, okay, yeah, the best spot is right here in this volcano, because of course that's the moment you have to make a little bit of a recording. But it sounded all right. It sounded I'm craving the donut I had the next day. Yeah, I ate a donut.
Yeah, you got a donut trip out of this, but I didn't.
There are okay donuts in Liberal.
But some clarification. I don't know if we mentioned when the last time the volcano erupted was, but it was about 60,000 years ago. I might have said a million years ago.
You said millions.
I did.
Yeah.
Okay, I was wrong. Okay, I can admit I'm wrong.
No, and you knew it right when you said it.
No, I didn't. I honestly thought it was millions of years. I don't know.
I just remember a discussion where we were concerned about this, and you did check that. So.
And the Aztec ruins aren't Aztec at all, so there. You know, I'm not the only one that makes mistakes,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But that's what they're called. Yeah, so 60,000, it's okay, though. It's not going to erupt anytime soon. It's all grassy at the bottom.
America will confuse you.
It will totally confuse you. I've been confused all my life, and certainly more confused now than ever.
You can hear it in our voices. We're starting to learn about how confusing America is.
But can I say something about Trinidad? Because I couldn't find out why it was named Trinidad.
Yes, you can.
But I did learn a couple of things that I didn't know at the time. Did you know Trinidad was dubbed the sex change capital of the world? You didn't know that, did you? Because a local doctor had an international reputation for performing sex reassignment surgery, And we're talking about back in the 1960s, this surgeon named Stanley Bieber, B-I-B-E-R, came back from Korea, decided to move to Trinidad because he had heard that the town needed a surgeon. In 1969, a local social worker asked him to perform the surgery for her, which he learned by consulting diagrams and a New York surgeon. Bieber attained a reputation as a good surgeon at a time when very few doctors were performing sex change operations. At his peak, he averaged 4 sex change operations a day, and the term taking a trip to Trinidad became a euphemism for some seeking the procedures he offered. We didn't know any of this in Trinidad. And get this is the cherry on top of the ice cream. Bieber was featured in an episode of South Park in which elementary school teacher Mr. Garrison undergoes a sex change operation. Yeah, so you make it to South Park, that's it, you know. That's the pin. And it's Colorado, Trinidad, Colorado. South Park is in Colorado. So it's pretty amazing. And just another example of how you pick a place because it has a cool-sounding name, but you learn all this other stuff that comes along with it. The way we traveled across America, I didn't anticipate it, but it was so rewarding on so many levels because, yeah, you can say, okay, I went to Denver, I went to Chicago. Everyone's been there. They know about the things. You know, you see shows, you see skyscrapers or landmarks. But here you find different things that other people might not know about. And also you meet interesting people, and later on in life you'll meet people who maybe came from those places or who have also passed through, and you'll have all kinds of stories. So, you know, if it's a Greyhound bus or a train or you rent a car or even hitchhike, although I don't advise it, this country is there for exploring and for exchanging ideas and conversation with people. And it's well worth it. Very, very glad we embarked on that.
Absolutely nourishing and keeps you on your toes. There are similarities, but there are local customs. You have to adjust and be open to, you know, everything from how you'll stay the night or where you'll find a drink or a meal. It's all a part of any kind of travel adventure. I felt really good about that too because we've done a lot of international and other types of travel involving mm-hmm. weird and interesting modes of transportation. This was another sort of a very quintessential just going on Route 66 in certain segments.
By accident. We didn't know it was there.
Stumbling in.
It was next to a highway that we were on, and there's Route 66. Let's get off the highway and drive on that road for a while.
As soon as we knew it, we made deliberate exits to be on that road and see what's left of it, see how much was built around it.
Right. And when we spent some time on interstates because it was unavoidable, most of the time, I would say we were not on interstates. We were on either two-lane roads or four-lane state roads or federal roads that are not interstates. And that's how you get from small place to small place. And when I say small place, I don't mean really, really tiny. I mean, you know, something the size of a town maybe in Suffolk County or maybe a little bigger than that. But not something that you would see as a destination for many tourists.
Absolutely, like a total a rural, small town, places that would have, like, local utilities. We mm-hmm. saw a lot of that.
Yeah.
Really funny places with tiny, small telephone company. We'd see working payphones and just, the blinking stoplight, that stop sign, that one intersection, that's downtown. That's the center of town.
If you're looking for inspiration as a writer, this is how you get it. I could see David Lynch, and I talked about him last week when we visited all the Twin Peaks and Northern Exposure landmarks in Washington State. But I can see somebody like that going to a small town, seeing that blinking traffic light, going to a local coffee shop or diner, and just being inspired by the characters, by the stories, by the landscape. It's really such an incredible opportunity.
You feel the same, like, romantic kind of nostalgia from a train when you do train travel.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird sort of contrast to be in the car and be in those same smaller, off-the-beaten-path places, but then there's this train or there's some piece of the railroad that emerges, a museum for trains that, you know, harken back, or this narrow-gauge train line that we were talking mm-hmm. about, that very large bigness of what that small town's connected to by those modes of transportation, you see that reflected even though you're not on a train. So I find that really kind of a warm memory and feeling you get while traveling.
I want to go back to Durango and ride that narrow gauge railway and visit other places as well. It's funny, I talked to Mike Juhas, who was on the show a few weeks ago when we visited him in Wisconsin, and we were watching trains go by. I mentioned all the small places that we stayed in. He's been to most of them, and he knows all of them. And I think that's something that we should all aspire to, is to know the smaller places in this country, because they're definitely very interesting and rewarding. You're listening to a special three-hour edition of Off the Wall. Finn is not on tonight at 7, so we'll be on until 9 o'clock. We have all kinds of excerpts from our recently concluded trip through America, which was fascinating and enlightening. I want to thank the people who pledged last week to WUSB and forced me to match the pledge, as I promised I would do. And I am matching every pledge that came in, so thank you again for that. We raised a good amount of money. We raised over $500 in 1 hour last week. But let's see if we can do more for, you know, a three-hour show. You can call 631-632-6901, and you'll either get a cheery volunteer picking up the phone, or you'll get a voicemail message, which will basically ask you to leave your information so you can get called by one of those cheery volunteers who will take your information and the amount of your pledge and all that kind of thing. You can also go to WUSB.FM, and that's really easy to do. Go to WUSB.FM, you'll see a little section on the side that says Donate or Pledge. And click on that, and you'll basically go through the entire page where you can pick things that you might want, or maybe you just want to make a pledge and not get anything sent to you. And then after that, you submit your credit card information on another secure page, and it's done. Just like that. Now, you might get an email saying you donated to Stony Brook, but WUSB is what you are donating to. That's the important thing, and it keeps this radio station on the air and allows us to do things like this. Not travel, we pay our own way, but allows us to broadcast it and to share and to get listener feedback. And by the way, if you want to send us listener feedback, otw@2600.com is our email address, otw@2600.com. We really love to hear from our listeners, especially if you're from one of these places or if you have some feedback or information that we might not have about this. And the suggestions we got from people, we got so many suggestions on places to go, such interest, and there's always somebody in some part of the country. And WUSB.FM, you can hear it anywhere in the world. So that's the amazing thing. But please pledge, 631-632-6901, or go to WUSB.FM and click on the pledge button.
That support is so crucial. It is the lifeblood of the station. It's sort of like that coffee I talk about so often on our travels here. And, you know, I kept going on about that. I sound a little bit snobby. But I think that that beloved drink, it's different in different places.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Utilitarian. It's keeping everybody going. Any time during the day, you know, and people enjoy the drink, and just getting accustomed to where you can find that hot coffee along your journey. So.
I had lots of good coffee, but I still say the best coffee I had in the whole trip, and it's going to sound stupid, but it's true, was the Double R Diner, the Twin Peaks Diner. When I stopped there to get a slice of cherry pie, which also was amazing. That was the best coffee I had. And I had lots of good coffee, too. I had some bad coffee. I might even mention that. But that was the best coffee, and I missed that place.
Anyway, do a recurring donation. Keep that drink that's operationally speaking We're powered by those financial donations, so please support WUSB.FM.
631-632-6901 or WUSB.FM. Click on the pledge button. We're going to go into our next chapter here of our journey through America on WUSB Stony Brook. Again, Finn will not be in tonight. We're on until 9 o'clock. You can write to us, otw@2600.com. And let's see where we land next in our journey through this amazing country. Well, here we are for Off the Wall. Emmanuel over here. Kyle over there.
Yeah, I'm with you.
You're with me in the back seat of a minivan because we're sitting, actually, we're sitting in Texas by the Cadillac Ranch in Amarillo. And we're in the back seat because the sun is shining really brightly and we have shades on the window in the back. And this allows the air to come through the open window in the front seats as we sit by, I believe it's Interstate 40. You hear all the trucks passing by in the background. There's a truck that's upended down the road, a spell. It just flat out fell over, I guess, in the high winds or something like that.
And I think a highway patrol stop is in progress on the opposite side of that. We're on a service road, and that allows us to get where we are.
Yeah, and we did get where we wanted to go, which, as I mentioned, was Cadillac Ranch. Thanks to listener Dennis for suggesting Cadillac Ranch in Texas for us to visit. It's basically 10 Cadillacs that are buried in kind of front end down into the dirt. Actually, this isn't the original site. It was relocated a number of years ago because they wanted to move it further away from the town, which apparently is growing. But it was part of an ant farm, I believe was the name of the collective installation. And just one of these odd ways of showing art. All kinds of graffiti is encouraged, and people come here and they spray all kinds of things on them. Just walk through a gate, walk down a little path, and there you are. People take pictures of it. It's kind of cool. It's just right here in the middle of a cornfield. So, any particular thoughts from you on the Cadillac Ranch, Kyle?
I like how it endured. I guess since 1974 it was conceived and started, and the group behind it was really interested in alternative architecture or ways to build things outside of corporate typical architecture and the business model therein. So they were funded by an independent owner, and that's how they located the sites and put it together based on just a kind of an idea that they came up with on the West Coast, believe it or not.
Yeah, from San Francisco. I don't think most of the people who are arriving here and basically taking pictures and writing graffiti, and most of them, I think, are local tourists. They kind of, well, maybe they could be from anywhere, I suppose. But I don't think they know that this is a bunch of artists from San Francisco that put this together. These 10 Cadillacs buried in the ground. It's kind of cool, though. Kind of amazing to see everybody appreciating the art.
Yeah, and it's not the first installation like this. The Marfa installation in Texas also is a sort of public sculpture that you can go up to, and it's odd. I guess there's just so much space out here, and quirkiness, in some ways. So you can put something up like this and see what happens to it, I guess, and see the reaction. Here, graffiti seemed to be a part of what it was going to be. They couldn't really keep it from being painted, so they embraced that.
Yeah, and speaking of quirkiness, this school bus just pulled up. I don't know what the deal with the school bus is, because this one guy and his child came out of it and took a picture, and now they're going back to it. But it's an entire school bus with, looks like, curtains over the windows. I mean, not a little bus, a big bus. Oh, okay, there's one more person in the bus at least. But it's kind of like, I guess, a Partridge Family bus, where they just go around the country in an actual full-fledged school bus. Doesn't have any writing on it or anything like that. It's not even yellow. It's sort of a pale green. They didn't even go to the Cadillac Ranch. They just went up to the farm, to the fence, and took a picture. Well, maybe there's more people. Okay, you know what? It's not about the school bus. So yeah, here we are, Cadillac Ranch, looking at artwork in Texas.
It's been pretty cool. We started the day in a place called Liberal, Kansas, and we drove to Liberal. It was kind of interesting how we got there, because we had started from New Mexico. Actually, no, we started from Colorado. Where did we spend the night before Liberal, Kyle? Do you remember? It was in Colorado. We know this. It was 2 days ago. It wasn't Durango, because we passed through Durango, but we didn't stay in Durango.
Well, I'm getting really confused. We were in Trinidad.
Trinidad, that was it. Thank you.
But that wasn't Colorado. That was Kansas.
No, that was New Mexico. Oh, hold on a second. No.
Oh, okay, yeah. Trinidad is Colorado. Liberal is in Kansas.
Okay, so. This is why we have to record things frequently, because we forget so quickly. Also, Trinidad is in Colorado. That's where we stayed, and then we went to Liberal in Kansas. Yeah. So Liberal. What did you think of? Well, first of all, talk about the drive to get to Liberal. We were coming up on the border with either Kansas or Oklahoma really quickly. I think it was Oklahoma that we were coming up to.
Yeah, this again. It was in New Mexico on our way out, and it's even it's kind of funny because the roadway goes right onto a corner of the Texas Panhandle, and apparently right on the side of the road there's a marker for the corner of the boundary of that state. But the roadway doesn't actually go into Texas at all. Anyway, we were coming up on that pathway. I was going to get very close to Texas and then go into Oklahoma. Per some of the research we found out, Oklahoma does not allow recreational cannabis, and I had a little bit of cannabis.
Yeah, we had to be careful about that. So wait, hold on a second. We're back in New Mexico. So we started in Colorado, and we somehow went back into New Mexico on our way to Kansas, but we almost went into Texas and Oklahoma on the way. Well, we did go into Oklahoma. Boy, there's a lot of states around here, and they're all so big, so I can't figure out how we went through so many so quickly. What we decided to do, because we only were a mile away from the border, and we still had a number of hours to go before we got to Liberal, we decided to go on a side road. Now, keep in mind, these roads are already kind of tiny, but the road that you told me to turn on, boy, that was the tiniest of all roads, I think, and not very many cars at all, very, very dark. It had gotten dark by this point. And it just felt like there was nothing around us for miles and miles and miles.
Yeah, I told you to take the turn right before the highway would get into that area and go over the border, ultimately. And that road was 406, and it basically goes up parallel to the vertical edge of the Oklahoma Panhandle. And I was able to find a small road where it cuts off to 410, and then it goes up. There's like a Oklahoma border road, and then it crosses over into something really weird, like EO3022 or something crazy in Oklahoma. So we got very close to that and took a couple breaks along that road before we actually got to the border to make sure that we could answer all the questions honestly if anyone was asking us and challenging us about cannabis, which I will say in Oklahoma, medical is okay. They're just not cool with possession, and they have some tax stamp thing. I don't know. I don't want to get into it. People got to figure this stuff out, or we got to do something nationally. But going along with the rules, I settled on that last leg and crossed over with you once we were, legal to cross.
Exactly, yes. Well, we had to pull over, obviously, so that you could finish what you had on you. And that was a challenge in itself because there were no shoulders on this road. It was just basically fields everywhere. We did find one turnoff, but there was a house there, and as soon as we turned off, all of these dogs started barking, and it caused a real ruckus, so we had to turn around and keep going down the road until we found another place we could turn off. It was super scary because occasionally there would be another car either coming up right behind you or alongside you, and you had to figure out how to make room. And, out here, speed limits are very weird. They go very high when you don't think they should go that high. like, you know, 70 miles an hour on a tiny two-lane road that has curves. And that's not even the highest. We were doing 80 on some of these in previous states, I think Utah and Idaho. You got to get used to that. But it's just, it really is nerve-wracking when you're going down these tiny roads and you have to pay attention, close attention. And there are some of the curves, really, you can't take it at the speed limit. It's not safe. You have to slow down, but there's no warnings to tell you to slow down. And you see where some people didn't use common sense. You see skid marks, and I don't want to get into it, but it's something. It's something else driving out here. But anyway, we made it to Liberal, Kansas, and we found a place to stay, which was a little nerve-wracking because there were all these people milling about in the parking lot, and there was some kind of a fight going on. And it was just kind of and there was, of course, nothing really open. There was some fast food places, so we just figured we'll just settle in for the night and get a fresh start the next day.
Yeah, that route took us through Boise City, which was not that big. It just was along the way. And then arriving here, really the only things we noticed were these huge factories. The first one we saw was the Seaboard Pork Processing Plant, and then National Beef once we got into Liberal. Those are massive meatpacking plants, and there were other facilities as well. We today passed by the JBS plant. We'll get into that.
Yeah, that's on our way into Texas. But yeah, going in last night into Liberal, we were aware of these massive plants, meat processing, slaughterhouses, all kinds of terrible things. And then there was the town itself. You know, when we got up today, just looked around, there really wasn't very much there. You know, like I said, a couple of fast food places, or a bunch of them, actually. You know, we just basically tried to find coffee. We stopped at one place because Liberal, Texas is known as the location of Dorothy's house in The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. I'm going to read from the pamphlet that they gave us, Liberal History Culture Fun. It's a rather large pamphlet, but there really isn't all that much fun, I don't think, here or there. A home built in 1907 has been preserved and restored to reflect the Gale farmhouse from the famous movie. Now, I want you to pay attention to that sentence I just read. A home has been preserved and restored to reflect the Gale farmhouse from the movie. It's not the house. They simply built a house and said, this is somewhat like the house that was in the movie. And here it is, and it's a tourist attraction now, and people drive up to it. We drove up to it this morning. You know, why not take a look at it? There were a couple of people with baby carriages going through this yellow brick road maze of some sort. We didn't do that. I pressed a button on the Dorothy statue, and Somewhere Over the Rainbow started playing. And then the Munchkin song after that. It was a trip. It was really something just to see that. And there were all kinds of statues of the Scarecrow and the Tin Man. But the best part was when we were leaving and Waze told us to turn left on the Yellow Brick Road because that's the name of the road there. That was fun. And so then we continued on our way on, what, Pancake Boulevard is what they call the place. It has one pancake place. I don't know why they call it that. We basically got mediocre coffee, and, you know, I regret I had a ham sandwich, because then we passed the pork place, and it's just, I feel so evil right now. When we saw all the cows on the land just waiting, it was just really, it shook me up.
Yes, the massive feedlots, and they only got bigger as we crossed into Texas. But you shouldn't feel totally bad. The ham you ate was already processed. You didn't necessarily lead to this entire industry or any one individual pig's demise.
Okay, yeah, hang on a second. You've been using this logic for a while now, saying that it was already dead. Yeah, I know it's already dead when I got it. But that just opens up space for the one that's alive now to fill that for the next already dead person, already dead sandwich. That, yeah, we're a part of it. We're in this. So it's just something you gotta live with, I guess. But boy, that first of all, we went through some comical town names. We went through Hooker. That was fun in Kansas. Tyrone is just an unusual name for a village, I suppose. And then we were in Cactus, Texas, which actually is the site of an ice raid that pretty much depleted the town's population. And the funny thing is, there are articles about this. When Trump did this, raided all these meat processing plants, the assumption was that Americans would take the jobs. No American wants those jobs. Nobody replaced all the immigrants, all the refugees that were working in these horrible conditions. It really suffered. The small town of Cactus really suffered. So that was interesting to read about that and just to see it firsthand. Of course, we drove past as fast as we could because it was terrible odors and just terrible aura to the place.
Yeah, there's stuff being done as far as like construction and road improvements, but a lot of these places are really large truck stops. Liberal was that way. It had a Love's giant, massive rest stop on each end for all of the livestock trucks and refrigerator trucks, depending on what end of that production line they're servicing. And it just feels like constant influx in and out. And these massive plants do that to the community. They bring in workers, the only workers that will take those jobs. They have a constant churn because of the working conditions. And, of course, then these, token raids and so forth to earn some political points. It's kind of sad. It's kind of sad. I really hope places like this, maybe in Liberal, the Wizard of Oz house is an attempt to bring arts and culture around to tell some stories or do some things other than murder animals. But hey, I mean, I think the more I think about it, this is why there's a lot of resistance to new ideas and different ways of thinking, because these are the only things that these areas seem to have. You know, it's meat and that livestock and that industry, or it's energy. And I think that I can relate with the perception that here come liberals, they're taking the only things away. They don't want us to eat, they don't want people eating meat, they don't want people extracting energy from the lands, and then they're going to give us, a theater, and that's somehow going to sustain an entire area. I can see why there's probably some disconnect that especially that those are the initiatives being kind of touted as progress. The real stuff that places like Cactus need are a sidewalk and a completed main street. And I think those are the things these areas would be more receptive to. And there needs to be some understanding that these massive processing and production operations do have an impact on communities that would otherwise not exist.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking as we were driving through, if I lived in a place like Liberal or a place like Cactus, what would excite me? What would make me look forward to the future? And I realized we're not really coming up with anything for people who live in these parts, and that's probably why there's a lot of resentment and pushback towards anything that doesn't sustain their current way of life. And by that I mean things like coal and the meatpacking and slaughterhouses and just things that are kind of being phased out in one way or another, or at least not growing as fast as they had in the past. And I think we need to do a better job coming up with innovative ideas that have immediate benefits and that people can really get behind and say, wow, this made my life better. Because it doesn't have to be this way. I realized, we're talking about The Wizard of Oz, 1939, in Kansas. You can say liberal Kansas if you want to believe it took place there. I know the episode of Fargo that was sort of a Wizard of Oz theme, that was actually filmed in liberal Kansas. So, yeah, okay, fine. Liberal Kansas is pretty much the default setting if you're talking about Dorothy Gale's Kansas, but it hasn't really changed that much since 1939. Here we are, 2021. What is significantly different? And technology has changed a bit. There's trucks coming through town, But overall, you know, people are still running farms and living life in a particular way, and probably living in the same place, which I think is great. But there should be more. There should be more to look forward to and to embrace. And if that was something that was more prevalent, I think there wouldn't be this disconnect with people on the East Coast and the West Coast who say, well, why don't you embrace this? Why don't you want to have change in your life? If people feel that they're just being conned and that they're on the verge of losing what little they have, and they really don't have that much, there's going to be resistance, and the wrong people will be embraced and followed. And I think that's what we're seeing in many parts of the country. And if there was more of a connection, more communication, because the people here have been nothing but gracious and friendly and hospitable and talkative, and it's really nice. We haven't felt out of place in any way that we've been, and we certainly do stand out. So I think the media kind of exaggerates the disconnects between people and the conflicts and the chasms, and I think those are much more easily bridged if we only make the effort, and that's what I hope we see more of, because, you know, speaking of the media, what they, and listening to the media as we drive, you realize they are really pushing. They're pushing hatred. They're pushing division in ways that we don't see reflected in everyday life out here. And it's to the media's benefit to do this, because that's ratings for them. That's papers sold or viewers or listeners. And if they can convince everybody that we're on the verge of civil war, well, then people are really going to be riveted to the radio, and they'll fall into that particular pattern. But that's not what I'm seeing right now. I'm hearing a lot of division in the broadcast, and when you have AM radio, basically it's all taken up by either religion, right-wing conservative talk radio, which basically say the same thing over and over again, or sports. And that's pretty much it. I don't know how many people listen to AM radio, but we listen to it a lot as we drive. And if that was the only thing we listened to, we would be convinced that that is how America felt. And it's not hard to convince people that there is a much stronger sense of support for the things you're saying if you're dominating on all the frequencies everywhere. Now, FM is not only slightly different, there's a lot of religion there. It's really sad. Below 92 is supposed to be reserved for non-commercial stations like WUSB. But religion qualifies for that, and they take up so many frequencies. The vast majority of frequencies are religious stations. Some of them are doing blatant commercials to sell things, and it's really sad and pretty disgusting, actually. NPR takes up a lot of space, too, but, you know, thank God for NPR, because what they provide is a voice of sanity and not something that's either to the right or to the left. I know people accuse them of being liberal, but when you listen, it's basically presenting facts, and you decide for yourself, or it's basically music or art or something different than what you're being constantly barraged with on the AM dial and most of the FM dial. So occasionally you'll find community stations, which are a treasure. Radio Boise in Idaho, wow, what a great station that was. You occasionally hear college radio and students playing music, and they are so few and far between. We really need more of that. And that is the kind of thing that gives me hope, just listening to these different voices, just having different conversations and observing things in various ways. So a lot out here, a lot to digest and think about and consider. But those are my thoughts.
Absolutely, and I think that 99% of it being a certain bend, you hear NPR, you think, oh my God, this is crazy, and when it really isn't far of a contrast, it just sounds that way contrasting with every other thing that's on the dial.
Yeah, and to give you an example, right now we're in the middle of this Kyle Rittenhouse trial. That's the guy I call him a terrorist who killed two demonstrators, or as they refer to here, rioters, or not here, but pretty much throughout the country on AM radio and right-wing conservative talk shows. He went to, was it Kenosha, and in Wisconsin, allegedly to protect stores from rioters, and wound up killing two people. Well, one of the things that came out in the trial, which has probably already ended by the time you hear this, but one of the things that came out, I believe this was yesterday or the day before, was that one of the people in the street also had a gun and was pointing the gun at Kyle Rittenhouse as he was being confronted or chased or something. I don't know the exact facts as far as what the exchange was. And everybody on the AM talk show circuit was reporting this as proof that these were evil people. And the other thing that was said during that testimony that was not reported by any of these AM stations was that either that person, because I'm not sure if that person was killed or that person was the one on the stand, because I haven't really been listening to the trial, but one of the people assumed that Kyle Rittenhouse was an active shooter, and they were trying to get the gun out of his hand. That was not reported. Only the part where somebody had a gun was reported. Now, it's so weird when you think about it, because if Kyle Rittenhouse had a gun and he was a good guy and the other guy had a gun, the fact that he had a gun made him the bad guy. Nothing else. He had a gun. He was pointing it at somebody who was threatening him with a gun. So by their own logic, Kyle Rittenhouse should be dead. He should have shot him and he would be the good guy by their own logic. But they don't get that far. They get to the point where somebody says, yeah, there was someone pointing a gun at him. Period. That's it. And NPR, if you listen to NPR, what they do is they report that both things. They report both things, that somebody was pointing a gun at him and they thought that he was an active shooter. Now, that's not biased. That's not saying Kyle Rittenhouse is guilty. That's reporting what was in the testimony. And that is not being reported to the vast majority of people listening on AM radio. So you have this distorted view of what is actually going on. And it's just being reinforced over and over and over again. And the constant hatred against Biden, my God. You know, you just turn on the radio within 5 seconds, you hear awful things. I heard one guy, this was really funny, I could just take the one sentence. He said, you know, I'm trying to be objective here, but I honestly believe that there is not one thing that Joe Biden has ever done in his entire life that benefits anyone. Come on, you're trying to be objective and you say something like that? Yeah, let's move on to the next station, because we know it's going to come out of your mouth. We just, time after time after time, this is what you hear. Oh, and it's just reinforced so often, and when you hear something reinforced that much, and this holds true to radio in other countries and throughout time, people start believing it. It happened in Rwanda. It happens everywhere. Radio stations are used for propaganda. And there is no question that what you listen to, what you hear on these AM stations and many FM stations as well, is pure propaganda. And that is what steers people in the wrong direction. Now, if everyone had access to balanced news, and you know I don't mean Fox when I say that, where they can make up their own minds, I think we'd see a lot more intelligent decisions being made. I don't think the people out here are idiots. I don't think they're racist. I don't think they're bad people. If we were able to start a conversation with them on any issue, and here we are sitting in Texas, you know, we could talk about the abortion issue, I suppose, if we wanted to. I think we would have a much more rational conversation with them than with anyone representing them in Congress, because, or anyone broadcasting to them on AM radio stations, because those people have agendas. Those people want to sell something. And the people here are basically honest people who have opinions and maybe have been guided in the wrong direction. But they're willing to listen. They're willing to talk. They're willing to hear other sides. And I do believe that when it comes to it, they'll make the right decisions. They'll do good things for people. They'll be there to help them. They'll be dependable.
But it really relies and depends on the information landscape. And when it's so choked and starved from a wide variety that people can pick and choose and pull and glean their own opinions and form that intelligently, they just look at this minority as insane and everything else is the normal, understood truth. And I know that that isn't representative of the people, but when you put that out there in the airwaves, it becomes really, really hard for people to think outside of that. It is all that they're exposed to, and it's how conversations and interactions are then, it's where that stuff is spoken from. And if it's misinformation or hyperbole, that's the kind of interactions people are going to have every day. They're going to speak through those stories, however wrong or misguided they may be. And I'm hopeful. I think also appealing to people's expertise. There are people here who are incredibly talented, who know things that we may not know on the coasts or where we're from. Mm-hmm. We passed by a huge cotton farm, or I think it was more like a distribution area where it's brought and put into these giant rolls. I'd never seen anything like that. I didn't know how modern cotton production works. I certainly understand the history of it and how it was done, but seeing it now and understanding that as an important commodity, it makes you realize, and then hearing ads about having full emergence of your cotton and you know, the technology and stuff behind crops and growing things out in the high prairie and so forth, you have a little respect, I think, for what it takes. We were driving in the middle of the night, and we saw all of these tractors mowing and baling hay or some kind of grain, and all you saw were these lights. It just looked a little bit alien, and I know all of that is computer-controlled now. It's all done with global positioning and coordinates and all of that, so they can just find the optimal moment and do it at night when it may be cooler or it's ideal temperatures and so forth. So just seeing that in progress, I know it maybe from my own curiosity, but having this firsthand view of, like, yeah, now's the time in the middle of the night and they're going out and getting this done. It's incredible to see and, get reminded of that in a place you've never been.
Well, we are about to leave this place that we've never been, the Cadillac Ranch in Amarillo. We've passed through Cactus, Texas, Dumas. I know that's not how you pronounce it. D-U-M-A-S. How do you pronounce that?
Dumas.
All right. You know, that's not too far off. And supposedly there's a song that that particular town claims as being about it, which I'm not really sure anything. I don't really know anything about. And for some reason there are flies in our car now. I guess we left the window open and there's just a lot of flies in this part. We'll have to deal with that. But we're going to continue on from Cadillac Ranch and head east. We're in Central Time now. That sort of surprised us. We somehow, damn it, a fly just flew into my eye. Last night in the middle, our navigation time wasn't adding up, and we figured, okay, we crossed into another time zone. That's what happened. So we're going to continue east, and we're going to wind up somewhere in Oklahoma, I believe. So we'll be exploring some places there.
Absolutely. There's really interesting indigenous and native communities out there, and all parts of Oklahoma that I've never explored. I'm eager to drive through that area, and we're getting a little taste of Texas here. We'll see what Amarillo's about. Maybe get some food.
Yeah, or we could stay here and watch that 18-wheeler get righted by the crane. They have a crane now, and they're going to be pulling that truck that fell over on its side. I've never seen that before.
Yeah, they've been transferring whatever was in it to a new trailer that's there, backed up next to the one that's on its side. And I think once it's empty, they're going to try to tip it back right side up.
It must have been wind, because this is a straightaway. I don't really see how it could have tipped over otherwise.
Unless it swerved, like the truck swerved from wind or from a car, like I could see it being top-heavy or something and just, with the aid of wind, just barreling over on one side from a sharp turn of the wheel that was too sharp at the wrong speed. I don't know. The physics are kind of magical when it comes to some of these huge, long semi-trucks out here.
And you have to respect the trucks when you are on the highway and you're in a car, because they are massive. I see some of the cars doing the wrong thing, getting too close, or not observing caution when they should. Trucks nearly always signal when they're about to change lanes. When they do, stay out of their way. They can't see you most of the time. And basically, passing them is something you have to be very careful about. When they pass you, you have to give them space as well. Never get into a competition with a truck, you will lose. But this truck, apparently, something happened to it where it fell over. Hopefully everybody's okay. But we're going to continue on, back onto the road. Yes, get some food in Texas and head on into Oklahoma.
Yes, here we are. I think Liberal's slogan was the crossroads of commerce. So you can really feel that out here.
And Liberal, by the way, it was named Liberal because its founder was a nice guy, apparently, who was very generous. And someone said, "That's mighty liberal of you." Or words to that effect. And that's how they got the name. They don't vote liberal, I don't think. I'm pretty sure they're solid red. But, hey, that's okay. All right, on our way to Oklahoma. Talk to you soon.
And back here live in the WUSB studios, or the substitute for WUSB studios at the moment, after that broadcast from the Cadillac Ranch. Pretty memorable, huh, Kyle?
Pretty memorable. It was the most memorable thing I can remember right now.
Yes, I guess so. But do you remember this? Do you remember this song that Bruce Springsteen released way back on his double album, The River? It's called Cadillac Ranch. Yeah.
I think even a photo
exists
of this ranch.
Okay, well, we don't have time to play the whole thing, but I figured, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't play some of that. You know, that was a memorable song when it came out. And I didn't know what the Cadillac Ranch was when it came out, and now I do. Now I've been to the Cadillac Ranch, and I think my life has been changed.
Well, yeah, the project now, it just seems like they are in a constant form, like a state of change. And it's weird how, like, it is an attraction. Like, the spray painting thing is actually something they encourage, and they sell spray paint to you. And I had some caps. I had some cans with me. I was ready.
we had our own.
But in another way.
But why do we have spray paint with us? I can't figure out why we pack that.
Let's not talk about it.
All right.
No.
We pack Lysol. We sprayed the motel rooms down before we settled in. Just as an extra precaution. Yeah, you might call us paranoid and crazy, but, you know, we're healthy at least. But spray paint, okay, yeah, I guess that is a necessity at times.
Yeah, if you need to get somebody out of your face, it's important to have
all the Lysol works too for that.
All the spray, yeah. Anyway, we were enjoying how this sculpture became its own evolving thing, and now the messages, everything, you could paint it one way, and then some person will come along 3 seconds after you and paint it another way.
That's right.
It is flowing. It's like a flowing, toxic, colorful, decaying thing.
Just like America. No, that's nasty. But just like an old Cadillac. How about that?
But the paint makes it very fluid. Like the messages, the colors, they're always in a state of change as people witness and contribute to this art.
By the way, you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. We are filling in for Finn tonight, who is not here, and we will be on until 9 o'clock with this extended edition of Off the Wall. Usually we're on from 6 to 7. Tonight we're on from 6 to 9. And we're talking about our voyage through America.
As best we can.
As best
we
can.
It's really hard. You said Liberal Texas at one point.
I'm sorry. All right.
I got that so wrong.
You know how many states we went through in one day? Let's try and remember all the states we started. And I'm not counting going across the other way. We started in Washington, Oregon, Utah, Then what? New Mexico after that?
We did like three at a time.
And
one
Arizona
night.
And Colorado. I know I'm missing one. And then we went through Texas for a little bit. And
Oklahoma.
I don't think we got to Oklahoma yet. That's spoiler alert. That's coming up. But I do want to issue an apology. I referred to the town as dumbass in Texas. That's not how it's pronounced, right?
Oh, yeah, cactus.
Well, cactus, I got that right. But how,
Dumas? I think it's referred to as Duma, but you could say Dumas.
Okay, well, we passed through it, and I just couldn't resist. But here's the thing. We were listening to, and this is an example of how you learn things just by driving through a place. We were listening to a radio station. It was called KDDD. You know, those callers just got me right away. And that's where I first saw the name of the town. I said, oh, look, KDDD, it's in Dumas. But no, actually, the call letters are named after a song. The song, and you're going to laugh, the song is I'm a Ding Dong Daddy from Dumas. It's a song written and sung by Phil Baxter. We couldn't get that copy of it. We were able to find a copy by Louis Armstrong, which is pretty cool. It was named after the town of Dumas, Texas. Now, there were no musical charts back then, but it was still a successful song during the 30s and the 40s. Not sure when this version came out, but here is Louis Armstrong with his version of I'm a Ding Dong Daddy from Dumas for the city of Dumas, Texas. There's a bit where a lot of instrumentation here before we start singing, so I guess we can say a couple more things while we wait.
Real smooth-like.
Yeah, you know, as radio DJs do. But, you know, it was cool listening to this radio station. We enjoyed it, and, you know, we go onto Wikipedia and learn as much as we can.
There's so much. In just one call letter, you could find this reference that... The letters themselves, what do they mean? Where did they come from? What is it historically? How did it come about?
Yeah,
all
KDDD,
that.
There's got to be a story behind
it's,
that.
It's curious. You just have to. It begs the question, all those idioms, it's there for you.
There's a story behind WUSB, but we'll get into that some other day. Oh, Louis about to sing. Stand by.
I'm a ding-dong daddy from Doomer, and all the team Doomstone. I'm being cut by the bum corner. Oh, you ought to see me stuck. Oh, Jesus, I was up, boop, and I done forgot the words. No, the ding dong, daddy, bum, two man. Ought to see me do me stuck. Ding dong, down, down, ding dong, daddy, bum, two man. Oh, please, baby, just to see myself. And but this did it, but bye.
If you can find a song about your town by Louis Armstrong, I think that's a winner right there. So that's about Dumas. a place I'd never heard of until we drove through it and listened to a radio station from there and found music about it. Wow. You're listening to Off the Wall, Extended Edition, as Kyle and I drive through the United States. I am told that we have run out of pledge forms at the radio station, so I guess that's a good sign. It also means we really need a copy machine. But you can call 631-632-6901, leave a voicemail message, and leave your information. Don't leave your credit card information. Leave your contact information, and somebody will get back to you and take your pledge that way. Or you can go to WUSB.FM, click on the pledge button, and fill out the form there, and keep this amazing radio station on the air. Maybe somebody will drive through this area and listen to this station and be inspired to do something else. You never know.
Those forms will be replenished, and we're standing by. You can also call the number. We'll basically have an answering machine available where you can be called back.
Voicemail.
Yes, a voicemail machine.
In the 21st century.
Yeah, some kind of robot will take your information and relay it to some form of human at the station that will then make sure that you're able to pledge.
Okay, thank you very much for everybody who is calling, and you can write to us, otw@2600.com, with your feedback. We have to get back on the road now. We have just gone through Amarillo, Texas, and seen the Cadillac Ranch. Let's check in and see where we are now.
Well, hello there. This is Emmanuel.
And I'm Kyle.
And we are here in Carbondale, Illinois, a place, honestly, we had never heard of before. But boy, it's pretty awesome here. It's a college town. We stopped here after being in a place called Henrietta, Oklahoma. You know what's happening? We didn't plan this. It just sort of started happening. When we headed east out of Seattle, we just kept going until we decided, hey, it's time to find a place to stay. And the first night we did that was a place called Hermiston, Oregon. Just a place we had never really been before. Found a cheap motel just to grab some sleep and start out again the next day. And then that next night, we wound up in Ogden, Utah. And then after that, it was Farmington, New Mexico. And around that point, we started realizing, hey, you know, we're not spending any time in the big cities. We're just landing in the smaller communities. But they're all interesting. They all have their own unique personality. And it just started turning into this other kind of trip where we're seeing America, but not like tourists. We're seeing America like travelers. And we're just stopping in all these small places where the people are really friendly and there's always some kind of interesting story. Just to run down the list, after Farmington, New Mexico, we stayed in Trinidad, Colorado. Then it was on to Liberal, Kansas, home of Dorothy from Wizard of Oz, supposedly. Then we went to Henrietta, Oklahoma. Now, it's Henrietta spelled with a Y, so that threw us. But we stayed in Henrietta, Oklahoma, and then up to Carbondale, Illinois, which is where we are right now. It's what do you think of that, Kyle?
And we haven't picked the next spot, and that isn't even something I'm concerned about, whereas when we were planning, and this is sort of counterintuitive, we're thinking of attractions and, well, what do we want to see, and what destination should we plot from one point to another, and almost having anxiety over not having one attraction after another. And we realize that really it's about, okay, where are we resting, where are we taking care of ourselves, but also what kinds of things can we see while we're there, and basing it on how much we're comfortable driving from one segment of this trip to another.
Yeah, it's we have an idea that we're going to be spending time in Kentucky after this, but we don't know exactly where. And we never decide where we're going to go until we have an idea of how far we're going to make it. Like yesterday, we drove quite a bit. I think we drove more than 8 hours yesterday. Today, to get to Kentucky, I think it's only about 3 hours, so we'll take it easy. And there's at least one or two more stops after that. I think one more stop after Kentucky before we make it back to New York. So it's been really thrilling. Just to let you know, let's update people. I think we were at the Cadillac Ranch last time we recorded an update. And so after that, we continued driving east And when you drive across the panhandle of Texas, you can drive across Texas much faster. Usually it takes about a day to drive across all of Texas, and that's a solid day because it's very, very big, very, very wide. But if you're in the upper part of it around Amarillo, you can legally say you drove across Texas because it's only a very thin part. It took us about, 3 hours or so. But in Amarillo, we stopped at this, we were talking about, meatpacking and slaughterhouses and the industry and all kinds of horrible things. So what's the next thing we do? We go to a barbecue place. But okay, you know what? I have no apologies for that because it was a pretty awesome barbecue place that we just found. It was not a tourist attraction. Well, maybe it is, you know, but it wasn't filled with, we were the only people in there. I don't know. How would you describe the place?
Award-winning.
Oh, okay, award-winning. Yeah, that sounds touristy, though.
Well, they seem to have high acclaim in the area and quite a operation as far as larger events and wholesale. They even had an area that was, like, explicitly for just those types of things. If you want to get a meal, they had even a drive-up window and stuff, and it was really, really fantastic food and just what we needed. I'm glad we didn't order too much because it would have been a really heavy meal. But we just grabbed a bite there and just took in some of the very food we were discussing being processed in the area.
Well, I had fish, so I didn't see any fish processing plants, but regardless, it was cool. It's one of these places where, you know, it's family-run, there's a kid running around, and it's just, it feels very humble, and it was kind of on the outskirts of town, so I was thrilled that we went there.
Yeah, and finding the local smaller places, that's the way to kind of experience some good tasting stuff that isn't something you could replicate and find anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. So we did that in Amarillo, and then we continued driving, and before we knew it, we were in Oklahoma, and that's when we set our sights on the small town known as Henrietta. We didn't really do much in Henrietta other than sleep and start driving, but there were a couple of interesting, can we call them native communities or just places with native history?
Absolutely. There's a couple, like, nations that you get the sense are the very land some of the towns are in the middle of. And then some of the cities we were in were the seat of government for one or the other particular nation. So the Muskie Creek Nation, and that was near Muskogee, and we were in Okagee as well, which was interesting. One was smaller than the other. We stopped through on the way to Muskogee. And there are various, like, cultural centers and really good informative exhibits and things that you can check out. But we just want to see the area, the neighborhoods, you know, like how different things worked, where the, you know, you would see, like, a health center and various things for different services and just the streets, you know, just the different names that are kind of adapted to whatever the city has become. And it was really fascinating. Muskogee was pleasant. We saw some more trains there and stopped.
Well, we saw a train there that was stopped at a crossing, and nobody could get out of town because this train was literally sitting there for about an hour. The whole time we were there. I guess you could get out of town if you went a different way, but it's just, that's part of life. The train is just sitting there. Occasionally it would move forward, then it would move backward. I don't know what was going on, but we got a sandwich in that town. It was really nice because a lot of old buildings, a lot of old structures, and both of the towns, it looked like they were rebuilding and just trying to revitalize the place. But the thing is, when you go to places like that, you're part of the revitalization process because, you know, you're doing business there, or you're learning about the place, or you're spreading the word about the place. So that was one of our motivations that that brought us there in the first place. And just walking around, we spent an hour or so walking around the streets and just taking in the sights.
I just want to reiterate the tribal nations that are there. It it is the seat of the Cherokee Nation up in the northeast of Oklahoma, and the Choctaw and Chickasaw are to the south, and then Muskogee was right in the middle. So that was a route we took to go north and make our way here.
You know, we've learned so much about Native culture, and this started back in Seattle when we were staying in a place, and we just happened to tune to a PBS station out of Tacoma, and realized, you know, for all our railing about how there isn't a Native broadcasting network in this country like there is in Canada with APTN, we discovered that there is one, in fact, and it's been around since 2011, and apparently nobody knew about it in New York. But that's not even true, because yesterday, while we were in one of these communities, I forget which one precisely, we were looking up that network, and we discovered that it's being broadcast in New York City on a low-power transmitter, and we are going to do everything possible to get it onto cable systems. It's called FNX, and we're going to be talking a lot more about the FNX network and how it can be brought to everyone's living rooms, because it's so interesting just learning about all of this and seeing what's possible. The really cool thing, this is a complete aside, is that it's being broadcast in New York City through PBS, through WNET, but they're using the call letters, and I don't know how many people remember this, but back in the 1960s, before WNET, the station, Channel 13, was called WNDT, and it was part of National Educational Television, NET, that is the precursor to PBS. So they're using WNDT as the call letters for this low-power station, and right now, I think you have to have a digital antenna to be able to receive it, and only in New York City. But there is precedent for such stations to be carried on cable systems all throughout, and that's what I really think we'll be working on. But that's just something we discovered just by watching TV and moving to the good stuff, not watching crap. So anyway, go ahead, Carl.
Oh, speaking of the good stuff, I was going to talk about cannabis in Oklahoma, because that is not what it seems. They, first of all, have medical cannabis is widely available, but something very interesting about it, you don't have to have a specific symptom. A doctor can prescribe you cannabis in Oklahoma for anything, for any reason they see fit. So what I realized when we were driving through more and more, I was seeing medical dispensaries everywhere, and it turned into sort of a running joke, because I was pointing them out, and I realized that once I saw a lot of billboards and things in Oklahoma City where we stopped for food after driving quite a ways before Henrietta, it was much like the West Coast or Colorado or even New York now, where you're seeing advertising for various businesses, conventions and expos on growing and so forth. So I'm really kind of interested, and apparently two bills have been filed, one to overhaul the medical system as it is in Oklahoma, and some legislation has been proposed, the other being full legalization in Oklahoma. And I can see, as I've said, so much evidence that they are ready. There is a lot of interest, and it is not as strict and huge policing or other kind of criminal priority. They realize they have other things to do and treat adults as adults. So that's kind of exciting. I can't wait to see more developments from Oklahoma, and I'll be back to participate.
Yeah, that was really something. That was a surprise to me to see all the dispensaries throughout Oklahoma, medical dispensaries, but still you can tell they're ready to go to switch over to recreational when that happens. And I say when, because it's almost a certainty. And you realize, wow, Oklahoma is changing. These states in this part of the country, they're actually changing. Now, it's a real shame that politically it can't be used as sort of evidence that, in fact, the country is moving in a particular direction. I mean, it should be, and it's something that I think Democrats really need to get on top of, because you know, marijuana being legal in a place like Oklahoma, that is huge. That is huge, and that is an indication of change that the Republicans certainly have not supported. And Democrats should be taking credit for this, and they're not. And that seems to be typical of just about every step in the right direction that this country takes. They don't take the credit for, or they don't want the credit, or they don't know how to get the credit. And they get the blame, though, for all sorts of ridiculous things that Republicans accuse them of, and they allow them to just, you know, control the dialogue and make various catchphrases that stick in people's heads. I don't want to get political here. Sorry, too late for that. But it's just something that goes through your mind when you see things like dispensaries in Oklahoma. You realize, wow, this is not what I expected.
And the way I think of it is, one thing you learn smoking cannabis early on is that not everyone who consumes cannabis is someone you want to consume cannabis with. And that's because there are a very wide variety of people that use it and find some benefit from it. And that should speak volumes for what it would take politically to get some unity on changing some of the arcane legal attitudes and social attitudes towards it.
Absolutely. So after driving through Oklahoma, we crossed into Missouri and drove through Missouri for quite some time. Did we really do anything in Missouri other than drive through it?
Well, we saw the arch.
Well, that was at the very end, so we had to drive through a good part. I don't think we really did anything in Missouri other than pass through. I'm not sure how much time we took to pass through.
There was
a lot of driving. No, was there a toll? Yeah, there was a toll, but was that in Oklahoma or Missouri? You know, it doesn't matter. Nobody really. Okay, we have a receipt. Pike Pass. Does that say Will Rogers Turnpike? Oklahoma, yeah. So it was Oklahoma, $2.75 that we paid. You know, we have this rental car, which, by the way, can I complain about this rental car? you can't close the windows. We have the windows open right now when the car is off. So you have to turn the car on. You can't go into auxiliary. It's just a button. So if you want to do anything, you can't even listen to the radio. You have to turn the car on before you can do a single thing. And that's and before, when I parked it, I accidentally pressed the button a second time, and the engine's so quiet I couldn't tell if it was on or off. So I had to get out to listen and then get back in and turn it off and then go back out again. Oh, it's ridiculous. Modern cars. I could go on for a long time about that. But anyway, so we continued. Yeah, we saw the arch. We crossed over the Mississippi, so now we're back on the other side of the Mississippi. Boy, we spent a lot of time on the western side of that. We listened to a really cool radio station in St. Louis at 88.1, and we wound up in Illinois, and we visited a dispensary. You know, we're not desperately going to dispensaries as soon as we can. We're curious. We want to see what they're like. And without exception, they're all professionally run. They're incredibly knowledgeable and efficient. And I wish the people on Long Island who are going crazy over the prospect of dispensaries in their town could just visit one and see what happens when people visit. It's the most professional and courteous type of business you could imagine. I can't compare it to anything because, you know, you just walk into this place and right away people are there to help you and to explain things as to what type of product they're offering. It really is heartening to see that. I've seen that in Massachusetts. I've seen that in Washington. I've seen that in Illinois. Everywhere we've been, that there is a dispensary. It's just really, really incredible. And I hope we see many of them in New York as well. It's a good thing. It makes a lot of money. And you see all kinds of people going to these places, truck drivers and housewives and house husbands and students, professors, not high school students or anything like that. They're very, very strict on you have to show your ID, you have to be over 21. It's good. They're doing a very good job, and they should be given a chance.
Absolutely. I think there's more scrutiny and stuff and kind of keeping track of you and your purchase there than what we had in liquor stores. They were scanning and doing all kinds of verifying, which does raise some questions in my mind, but there's, I think, a careful balance and understanding of why they want to keep track of things and make sure that the sale is recorded and so forth according to whatever the jurisdiction is. And you notice some differences in them, but I have nothing but shout outs to all the bud tenders out there and future bud tenders.
I really wish I could somehow record the conversations that go on there, because just the level of sophistication with people discussing quality and effects and ingredients and things like that, it's so impressive. It really is. I don't understand half of it. You're a connoisseur, and obviously, Kyle, you know your stuff. You've known it for many years. But just to see so many people appreciating that, you know, it's like, I guess it's like being in a wine club or something, but without the pretentiousness. That's a very important thing. So we basically arrived in Carbondale last. Oh, I hear a train coming. We're at the there's an Amtrak station here in Carbondale, and it actually is where the city of New Orleans stops once a day in either direction, on its way from New Orleans to Chicago and Chicago to New Orleans. But that's probably not the train that's approaching. This is either going to be a freight train or one of the Amtrak Midwest lines, which goes from Carbondale to Chicago. I think twice a day there's the Chicago-Carbondale line. And Carbondale is the last stop on that route. And, yep. Yeah, that is Amtrak. Okay, so it's pulling in right now. Wow, that's kind of... That's, you know what? It's due at 1:45. It's 1:45. Amtrak is on time. It's a 5.5-hour trip. Congratulations, Amtrak. Amtrak Midwest pulling in right now. Double-decker cars. It's not really necessary when you're stopping to blow the horn, but why not? It's a big train.
Everybody's a critic, you know? Give it a break. He's trying to, you know, make sure it still works.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 cars on this. Wow, that's a pretty big big train there. So yeah, Amtrak has a station here in Carbondale. Come on, how many people have heard of Carbondale before? It's a college town. It's really a pretty neat place. We came in here last night, and we figured, unlike many of the towns that we've been staying in, we'll be able to find food, especially looking at the various websites and apps that tell you where things are, what's good, what's open. And lots of times those things just are completely wrong. But other times you can just get kind of mixed up yourself. We drove into town after checking into our cheap-ass motel, which actually turned out to be really nice. Every motel we stayed in, have you noticed this? Every single one has a refrigerator and a microwave. Not one exception.
No, they're always with an appliance. Assuming we're bringing, I guess, leftover meals or, you know, casseroles or something.
Which we have not done. I brought a bottle of water, and that's pretty much all I put in the refrigerator. But it's really good to have a nice cold bottle of water in the morning when you wake up. Anyway, so we went into town, and I guess we kind of got our signals crossed, because I looked up places to have food, and there was some kind of underground place that we wanted to go to. It was underground. What was it called?
The Underground. The Underground Barrel and Grill.
Okay, yeah. And they were supposedly open late. And we had to figure out how to maneuver all the streets to get there, one-way streets and no turn here, and traffic lights, and people, and we finally figured out where it was, and we parked the car, and we walked in, and the door was locked, so we were plenty pissed off by that, so we figured, okay, you know, there's other options. I mean, you know, these sites were telling us, yeah, the Chinese place is up until midnight, there's a Thai place, and I was like, really? I don't think so. I don't believe that for a second, and we really didn't find anything. There were a couple of kind of disgusting-looking fast-food places that we didn't want to go to. But then you found some kind of large bar. By large, I mean the size of a full restaurant. I guess because they have a kitchen, but of course the kitchen wasn't open that late. And we walked into this place, and it was filled with, I guess, local towny type people, you know, middle-aged people, all plastered out of their minds. But, you know, kind of charming because you're in this environment that just is comfortable for them. And you felt like you were part of something. So, you know, we were welcome there. Of course, we could only get a beer, but that was fine. You know, after driving for over 8 hours, the two of us, just having a beer was all we wanted.
Yeah, it was just enough. And they brewed their own both a dark and a light beer, and we tried either, both, one of each. And
well, hold on, to be clear, each of us had one. I had a dark, you had a light. And we didn't have two. It's not that important. I mean, we certainly deserve two, but no, we just had one.
Yeah, we collectively, I mean, as our party there. But then we kind of wanted to, well, get going.
I was sort of, you know, stuck on the fact that we were given inaccurate information. And I was like, how could it be? The thing said 2 in the morning. It was open until, you know, we got there before 11 o'clock, and the doors were locked. And that's when we discovered that what you were describing as the underground was not the same underground that I had found, because I had found something called the cellar, which was also underground. So there's two places that were underground. And so we basically looked it up and discovered that, actually, it's very close to where we are right now at the Amtrak station. And by the way, the Amtrak train is now moving in the other direction. So I guess it's going back to Chicago now. Okay. That's efficient.
You did say it was the end of that line.
I did. And I guess if you look down there, that's probably the end of Illinois. You can't go out of Illinois, and now it's going back to Chicago and the Amtrak Midwest. In fact, we'll see the name of the route. It's a nice engine, IDTX 4607, the Saluki line, S-A-L-U-K-I. And that's a regional Amtrak line. Very very sleek looking and very, very cool. And a lot of people got off that train, too. So, yeah, it was near here. We found a place called the Cellar. And we went downstairs. The door was unlocked, and we went downstairs, and boom, that was it. That was where everybody was. Must have been, I don't know, how many people would you say were in that place?
50, 75?
A lot of people. Nobody wearing a mask. Everybody just in this bar. Of course, no food to be had, so we just got a couple of other pints as well. We figured we deserved it. And I don't know, you know, it felt like a super spreader event. It really did. But we tucked ourselves away in a booth and, you know, didn't get close to anybody and just told ourselves, okay, everybody's vaccinated. You know, we're being safe here. Could be safer. We have our masks, but we're not going to wear them because what's the point if you're sitting in a booth drinking beer? But we stayed, you know, for a little while. I kind of did what I do in places like this. There's this app called TouchTunes. It's basically a jukebox app that you know, you can get on your phone. And I discovered that you can play songs on jukeboxes, and you don't even have to be in the place to play the songs. But when you are in the place, you can pretty much change the mood. So the country music that was being played, I kind of barged ahead. You know, you pay extra. Instead of 2 credits, you pay 8 credits to play your song first. So I just basically found that place. It pops up to the top of the list, the place that's closest to you. I just basically moved my song to the top, and the country music stopped, and Echoes by Pink Floyd came on. That's 23 minutes long. And I don't want to say that cleared out the place, but it moved it away from the redneck type of vibe that was going on.
Yeah, it calmed it down a little bit. There was this intro that's very quiet, so everybody realized the sound of their own voice in there. I might add, you jumped ahead 40 songs.
Yeah, there were a lot of songs ahead of me, but nobody apparently paid to have it played first. So, yeah, you want revenge? Well, not revenge. We just want to take control of the place. 23-minute song by Pink Floyd, we'll do that. And that sort of gave us some space.
Yeah, and it seemed like most of the people there were students from SIU and neighboring neighborhoods that it was this well-hidden, lively place. So, but they had billiards and a pool going, and all kinds of separate tables and people talking. It was cool, though, because it just changed that whole dynamic of people shouting over stuff.
Yeah, and may I point out, too, that nobody complained. Nobody complained about the music. Not like that time I played Yoko at a different place that I won't talk about. But, you know, it was basically a strategic move, and an expensive move, too, I might point out. But it's a cool little app. I've had some fun with it. And like I mentioned, you don't even have to be... I could play music back in New York from here and just know that it's being played. That can be a lot of fun. So we had a good time in that place.
That was also how you found out that there was activity at the cellar, because they were playing a certain song.
That's right. You can see what is being played. Like, you can see at the Elks Lodge what they're playing on their jukebox. And we discovered, by looking at that app, that somebody was playing Steve Earle in the cellar. And that told me they had taste, so that was a good sign. But you can also see what's coming up. I saw Bon Jovi was coming up. I had to do something, okay? There was... I don't think anybody would disagree that something had to be done at that point. Maybe a 23-minute long Pink Floyd song was over the top, but you know, I just wanted to relax a bit and have people clear out a little bit around us, and we that happened. Nobody was hurt, and Pink Floyd got some residuals. Okay, so we are, as I mentioned, sitting at the Amtrak station. The train has left, and I think we are going to start heading to Kentucky. But before we head to Kentucky, I just want to talk about what we did recently here in Carbondale. We found a good place to have breakfast or lunch or brunch or whatever. This vegetarian vegan place, which, by the way, when you're traveling, that is by far the best food you can get. You won't feel bad. You won't be sick or anything like that. It's just healthy.
And you'll feel like you have energy that lasts.
Absolutely. I had a Shanghai bowl and a Vietnamese coffee. That was a good way to start the day. And we pulled up to this little tiny cafe on this block of shops that's kind of isolated from the rest of town. And we hung out there for a while. It was right by the train tracks, so a freight train go by. That was kind of cool. And then we just drove around, looked at the college, SIU. What does SIU stand for?
Southern Illinois University.
You pronounce the S on Illinois?
Well, while I was transitioning to the U in university, but I'll say it again, Southern Illinois University.
Okay, that sounds more acceptable to my ears. So SIU, yeah, we drove around and we just explored the town a bit. And then, you know, we were listening. I mentioned cool radio that we were listening to. We found a station here in Carbondale. I figured, you know, a college town, they have to have a college radio station. And they do. Well, not really college radio station, but a community radio station at 91.1. It's called WDBX, and we were listening to it last night. They were playing all kinds of very interesting music and talking about it, and it was just, it's one of those stations that you really can't stop listening to. And I just said, why don't we stop by? Why don't we see what this place is like? You know, it's here somewhere. And so we started looking up the address and trying to find out where this place might be. And wouldn't you know, it turned out to be on the same block that we had been to the cafe on. The same damn block. We drove all around the city, and there it is. We could have walked to it. So we parked again in front of the same place and just walked over to this nondescript building that was the radio station. And the door was open, unlocked, we walked in, and the people we were listening to on the radio were right there. There was a bunch of vinyl in the front room, and there was a studio, and there were the two people we were listening to, playing all kinds of interesting country music and just having this banter back and forth, which was delightful, and we were able to tell them that. We were able to go in there and just say, hey, we're from New York, you know, and we're traveling from Seattle and driving through, listening to you guys, you have really good chemistry. It meant so much to be able to do that, and just to be able to trade stories about radio and realize that there are these little meccas all throughout the country that if you take the time to explore, and most non-commercial stations are below 92, and unfortunately a lot of them are taken over by religious groups or maybe NPR clones, but occasionally you find something precious and unique that is local, and this is one of those places. So we were able to go in there and just check out their operations, and I got to tell you, it was inspirational seeing what they're able to do It's humble, but it's theirs. And the programming is really amazing, and it's got community support. They have underwriting for just about every hour of the day. And radio is just such an important thing to have. It can be used for good. It can be used for bad. We've seen a bit of both on this trip.
And they're so eager and interested in what we're up to, where we're coming from, and they want to hear about other community radio projects, and they're aware of other stations and little enclaves in the country or in the state, and can tell us about, you know, other things that you might not know about the station or how they operate, and of course see parallels. And I saw so many, especially in proximity to the school and how we are so familiar with various engineering things at Stony Brook and at WUSB. So that was just kind of a magical ability to just drop into a station and then feel at home and catch up with people that are genuinely interested and excited to see people that are in a fellow industry or creative space.
I should also point out that both in the cafe and at the radio station, people were wearing masks and being safe and doing all the things that are smart. And that was also cool to see. So, WDBX, amazing place. And there are so many more like it. We're going to start heading to Kentucky, and I imagine we'll find some interesting places there as well, hopefully some good radio. But we are going to be crossing into the Eastern time zone, and that's going to be awesome.
Absolutely. We've got our final hour bump to get on time.
All right, so we'll pick a place and stay there. It won't be Louisville. It won't be Bowling Green. It won't be a place that people talk about. It'll be someplace small. But you know what? If we get there early enough, like maybe before 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, we might actually get food in this place. Usually, if we get someplace and the sun is set, everything is closed. And it's really kind of annoying, but you get used to it. And we work it out the next day.
We always make do. We find something, and it's understandable, disappointing, but understandable for some of these places.
It's a way of life, and you kind of have to adapt to a different way of life when you're traveling, and that's what we've been doing this whole trip. So we're in the home stretch now, I guess, probably two more stops after this. I'll miss Carbondale. Anything else you want to see in this town?
I can't imagine much else that would be pressing since we do have to kind of get on the road, you know. I mean, I would love to stay, and there is probably more here. We'll perhaps be back. Of course, we could always get off a train here. So
That's true. We could take that Midwest line. We took a Midwest line going up to Milwaukee from Chicago. There's much about Amtrak that I didn't know about. I didn't know about the Midwest line, so that's pretty cool. They have a train museum here, too, in Carbondale. They seem to have train museums everywhere, which is awesome. So, okay, we're going to head to Kentucky, and we will check in from there at some point. See ya.
Bye-bye.
And back live here at WUSB Stony Brook. That was an amazing leg of our journey, Kyle.
It was, and right after that, we saw an accident.
That's right. Yeah, we saw a horrible accident involving a bicyclist. I didn't hear anything about that afterwards, but hopefully he was all right. You gotta wear helmets, folks, when you're in the street. Certainly.
We see so many cyclists commuting, people getting around that way, but they do not wear reflectors or they don't have accessories like lights, and it's so critical. You have to be seen if you are on a roadway like that.
And if you're driving, you have to be super careful to look out for cyclists and pedestrians and people on scooters and all sorts of things like that. To sum up some of the other things that happened, you mentioned the native village, Muskogee, that we saw. That was a really cool place to hang out. But, you know, it was while we were there or while we were driving around that we learned that there's a TV show called Reservation Dogs. It's filmed pretty much entirely in that area. It's actually filmed in Okmulgee, the other town. And we'd never even heard of that TV show. So now we know about a TV show that we have to see. And also, as mentioned, we learned about that Indigenous Network, First Nations Experience, FNX. They're basically out of California, And they're carried in several places, and we are going to make sure they're carried here in New York and put on cable systems.
Yeah, we saw some of the broadcasts in Seattle and along this journey of learn more about it. So that's kind of something we'll be eager to pursue, or at least see attempts at that being broadcast more widely.
Yeah.
There's plenty of people who appreciate it.
Absolutely. I mean, we see APTN out of Canada all the time. But to have something in this country that educates people not only on the indigenous community in this country but throughout the world, that is something that I think we'd all benefit from. And since it's now being broadcast in New York City on this new low-power station, WNDT, we really should work together to make sure that it's available to people who don't have those antennas and stick them out the windows in Manhattan, because I think that's about the only way you can see that now. So, again, this is WUSB, Stony Brook. We are filling in for Finn. We're in the final leg of our journey. We'll be on until 9 o'clock. I believe Bill Darling takes over at that point. You can pledge to the radio station, keep us going, keep stories like this on the air and all sorts of other things that we broadcast throughout the week by calling 631-632-6901 and leaving your information for a volunteer to call you back and take your pledge, or you can go directly to WUSB.fm and click on the pledge button and fill out the form.
It's so crucial. Please think about doing recurring donations. Those are real simple and a way for you to kind of set it and forget it. You get to just get a small amount every month contributed in your name to the station, and that would be a great way to start becoming a regular subscriber to what you're hearing now, and maybe you listen to other programs on WUSB. We want your support. Now's the time to do it.
All right, we are moving into the final leg of our journey through America here on WUSB. Again, please call and pledge WUSB.fm, and we'll talk to you in a little bit. Let's hear this final chapter. All right. Well, here we are, Kyle. It's Emmanuel here for Off the Wall. We're in the final part of our trip. Well, close to the final part of our trip. We are right now in Pennsylvania, heading east towards New York. We've seen some signs for New York City. It's been quite an adventure, hasn't it?
Yes, we're making our way through the state of Pennsylvania, and earlier today we were in Maryland, as well as West Virginia.
And before that, we were in Kentucky. I guess we should run down where we've been. Okay, I can never get this town right, even though we stayed there, and I directed us to it. I kept calling it Marystown, and then I called it Marysville, except it was really Elizabethtown, but then I realized, no, it's Elizabethville. And I'm not even sure I got it right there. It was Elizabethville, Kentucky. Am I right?
I think so. I thought it was Elizabethtown, but if you said it the wrong way, and you're expecting me to recount it based on the only place I heard it, which is you saying it the wrong way, then you've got the wrong idea. I am not the guy to ask that.
Oh, boy. If you think it was Elizabethtown, then you're probably right. I think it was Elizabethtown.
Okay, let's go with that.
Okay. Well, there's one way we can tell for sure. The place we stayed afterwards in West Virginia, was that called Morganville or Morgantown?
Morgantown.
Okay. Then it's Elizabethtown because they were both towns. They both ended in town. That's how you tell.
That makes sense. Okay. So Morgantown was where we were this morning, and Elizabethtown was where we were last night.
Yes. Yeah, okay, now I remember. Actually, no, not last night, because two nights ago. Because yesterday morning is when we left Elizabethtown, Kentucky, to get to Morgantown, West Virginia.
Okay, yeah, actually, that's right. Elizabethtown is a different state. That was Kentucky. And it was... you know what? It was historic. We found a very good coffee place there in town and stayed a little bit outside in a rather nice place. And that was about it. That's all I really remember.
Well, the coffee shop was a very pleasant surprise because, you know, when you're in a small place, and the reason we're staying in these small places, they just seem to make sense on the map. We want to get to a certain place. We say, okay, there's a town. Why don't we see if they have any place
that we can stay there, and we'll just stay in that town, learn something about it. And the deal with Elizabethtown, it didn't really have very much, but we found an interesting downtown area. And in the midst of that downtown was a really cool coffee shop. We weren't expecting to find in a place like that. So we were to just sort of hang out and enjoy the vibe. A lot of people were there. People were observing masks inside the coffee shop as they walked in, I think. I'm having trouble remembering where people observed masks and where they didn't. But usually when it's a younger crowd, they seem to be doing that. And sometimes if you walk into a place with a bunch of older people, they're not doing that. And also it depends on the state you're in. Certain states, like Washington, Illinois, they tend to take it more seriously. When we were at Carbondale in Illinois, and certainly Chicago way before then, people were taking the virus seriously and wearing masks. And then other places, Kentucky, West Virginia, not so much, except when you're in kind of like a college environment most of the time. There were exceptions to that as well. So it's been really touch and go as far as do we wear a mask going in here? Do we not wear a mask? Do we should hold our breath? What do we do? But I think for the most part, we've tried to be as safe as possible, keep our distance. And certainly every time we check into a motel or hotel room, we spray it down ourselves. And, we feel better because of that.
Yeah, and it is a true inconsistency. You have places that have signage and want you to obey it and do certain things to keep everybody safe, and half the employees aren't doing it. And then you go to another place that doesn't have any kind of signage, doesn't seem like the place that would enforce or be at all kind of concerned, and everyone there is taking, extraordinary precautions. And you realize you just have to kind of gauge it as you go. And in another case, maybe we'd go into a place where no one was wearing anything, and it was like ourselves, we would draw more attention by adhering to the guidelines and taking precautions, and maybe make all of them feel uncomfortable, which is crazy counterintuitive, because if anything, we should feel uncomfortable having masks on in a place where no one is doing that, but all of a sudden the social dynamic switches, and you are now trying to make people who are unmasked comfortable. And I find that it's slightly insulting on some levels, but also kind of a means to get by and survive.
But, you know, what's interesting about that, you're right, because I was feeling uncomfortable in certain situations. But I have to say, and stress this point, that at no time did anybody make us feel uncomfortable. Nobody said anything or glared at us or, just everyone was doing their own thing. And I hope we didn't make people feel uncomfortable. And while I felt somewhat uneasy at times, I always feel like we were doing the right thing and taking the precautions that we were comfortable with. And that's really all you can ask.
Indeed, yeah. And so it was a kind of a quick trip through Kentucky there. And I forget exactly...
Well, actually, I'm going to put you on the spot here, because before we went to... I almost said Marystown again. I don't know why I keep saying that. Mary's not even involved in this. It's Elizabeth. Elizabethtown. I should find out who Elizabeth was, too. That's another show. Okay, so when we went to Elizabethtown, before we went to Elizabethtown, we went to another town that begins with an O. Do you remember that, where we went to the seafood place?
Yeah, and I don't remember the name of the town. It was on the water, and it was a lovely restaurant. I want to say it was Owensburg, or Owensboro.
I think maybe Owensboro. Oh, boy, this is terrible, especially if somebody lives there. But you know what? Maybe it's not so terrible, because this has a bad history where there was a public lynching in that town, and it was such a horror show that it was the last public lynching that took place by, I think, order of the state, the governor, or something like that. Of course, there were other lynchings, but just not ones that were run by the local government where they were selling popcorn to kids and things like that. So yeah, it was pretty ugly for that. But we had a nice dinner there. We went to a seafood place, and that was really kind of unexpected. But it was a very big town, and of course we were there at night, so we didn't really get a chance to look around. But that was sort of a stopping point on our way to Elizabethtown.
Indeed, and it's not at all the attraction. We only found out the history until we'd chosen this particular spot, and we're researching the town a little bit more. The draw for us at this particular point in the journey was just seafood. And we managed to try some of the famous bourbon. I had a little bit of bourbon, and that was it. We didn't, like, explore much more. We had to keep going, and we woke up in Elizabethtown, as you've been saying, had a fair amount of, something to get us going, a bit of coffee, and then launched to West Virginia, and in earnest made our way to Morganstown, which is...
Not Morganstown. One Morgan.
You know, it's so easy to just slip that S in there, but you're absolutely right. It's Morgantown. In West Virginia.
I don't know why I can remember Morgantown, but I can't remember Elizabethtown. I don't know why. It's just some block in my head.
It's okay. There have been a lot of towns and a lot of unique names, and stringing them all together and making sense of it, which has basically been how we planned our trip. We couldn't have planned to visit any of these places beforehand. They were all stuff that emerged as the road lay before us. So...
I gotta say, though, I really, really like Morgantown. I really do. It turns out it's a college town. Again, we didn't know that when we picked it. Just seemed like the right place to stop. Big college town, University of West Virginia. But even better than that is this amazing transport system they have on campus. It's basically, what was the acronym again?
Okay, first I'm going to correct you. Since you're correcting me,
All right.
It's West Virginia University, WVU, thanks.
What did I say?
University of West Virginia.
Oh, my God. Did I really say that?
It's criminal. I can't believe you did that. It's the Personal Rapid Transit System.
Personal Rapid Transit, or PRTs. Now, you may never have heard of a PRT before. I know I never did. I just happened to be looking up this town in Wikipedia, and I discovered that they have this system that's been around since 1975. It used to be controlled by a computer known as a PDP-11. In the 80s or 90s, they switched to a Pentium computer. But I don't know how to describe it. We didn't actually see it working because it was closed the day we were there. But it's single cars that either run on a schedule or you can summon them. They're driverless. They run on a track. They go to one station after another, or they can skip stations. And there's only a handful, literally, of systems like this in the world. In Morgantown, West Virginia.
Incredible. It's so funny, too. We were exploring and reading about this, and the more we read about this PRT system, it just got cooler and more interesting. And it really is a fusion of various mass transit and rail-like systems. It has elements of an elevator, I hear, because you can go point to point. You can skip stops, basically, as a part of its automation. It has other aspects that are very similar to what we've seen in metros, in particular wheeled metros, metros that have bus tires on the bottom of the subway cars, particularly Montreal, as well as, I believe, parts of the Paris metro? No. I think Paris does have some wheeled as well. Be that as it may, that plus really interesting communications system in what is called an induction loop. So basically, kind of like the wireless charging thing that is popular in cell phones right now. This is how signaling was sent, through loops of conductor that are placed along this track. And the track itself is fascinating. It is a concrete guide that allows these cars, and the cars have horizontal wheels on the front to kind of center it in the concrete track, and it rides along that, and then the wheels are angled so that they follow along the curvature, and those front horizontal wheels kind of keep them from ramming into the side as it barrels down the track. All kinds of other innovations too. It's got
like a liquid heating system, basically a coolant loop circulating to keep freezing weather off the tracks. It just has one amazing engineering design after and layered on top of it, so that it's its own unique kind of totally new way of designing a transport system, and it ended up being incredibly reliable.
You say totally new, but again, 1975 is when this thing was put into service, and I don't think they really took off in popularity, because they don't really work well in cities, because the capacity is rather low. I think you can fit about 20 people in a car, and they don't really work in the suburbs, because, well, the track takes up real estate, and it's, you know, as you said, concrete. Although there is high voltage, you're not supposed to step on it. There are warning signs, so I'm not exactly sure how that works.
Yeah, it's like a third rail, but it's three lines. So I guess those would be phases of like something like 570 volts or something around there, 567 volts at 60 hertz, and there's three conductors, and they brush along this sort of, I guess we'll call third rail, but it's really several conductors, and it runs alongside the track. So the cars have equipment alongside them that brush that and power them. So they're completely electric in that way, as far as moving around. But you're right, it's just mainly for a kind of contained campus. It really doesn't scale out, and it being so old, it was just new in sort of the sense of it being unusual.
And it's actually three campuses of the university that this links, which is very interesting. Now, I mentioned there was in a handful of other places. I think one place where a similar PRT system exists is Heathrow Airport in London. Another is somewhere in South Korea. I think there's one in China. In all cases, the total amount of area that the PRT covers is about a couple of kilometers, maybe 3 kilometers, no more than that. At Morgantown in West Virginia, it's over 13 kilometers. So it's the biggest in the world by far. And there are so few of these things in existence. And it's just so... This, to me, typifies what we've been discovering on this trip. You can pick tiny places to go to, and no matter where you go, you're going to find something unique about the place. You're going to find something interesting, something that you did not anticipate. Who would have thought that there was this mass transit system in a small town in West Virginia that exists virtually nowhere else in the world?
And interesting this town was. The way it came about is sort of a really unique, quirky, and, well, typically local story. It was through the engineering department on campus, I think, where people were looking into ways really to alleviate downtown traffic, which is something that we've noticed and is a concern in cities all around this country and the world. But it dawned on them in the 60s and that this was a problem. That the buses, the congestion, it just was not working. And that a little bit of a system, something that could offload and remove some of that traffic, would go a long way in the city. And it turns out it was actually quite effective. And so that is how it came about. The funding and so forth was I think around $130 million. There were several rounds of funding, and it had support from Senator Byrd, former Senator Byrd, and so it took a little bit of politics and wrangling to get together, as we are all too familiar with when it comes to infrastructure and transportation projects in any locality. It's always a concern of, like, how do we do this? How do we pay for this? Will it really be worth it over the long term? I'm just amazed that this system ran for, like, it was something like 40 years and was safe. They did have one or two accidents in 2016. There was a collision and so forth. But really, the effect was so helpful.
In fairness, it was a boulder that fell onto the road and kind of got in the way. So, you know, I think there was one instance in its entire history where one
car collided with another, and very few people were minimally injured in that.
I blame the new computer system, the Pentium computers in the 90s. That's probably what did it.
But you know what's interesting? I mentioned that the cars hold, I think, about 20 people. But you uncovered there's this special occasion that happens once a year?
Yes, yes, yes. The PRT Cram. And this thing was hilarious. I was reading about it, and it is essentially a challenge that they would do during Welcome Week or whatever kinds of orientation. Every year, this tradition emerged. And the PRT Cram was all about how many students can we fit in one of the PRT cars, which I'm sure there's some hilarious pictures of it, but the car is modified. I guess they take the windows out and fit as many students in, and I think the record is 92 students.
92 students in a car that normally holds about 20. And I love how it's students. It can't be faculty or anyone from the community. It's got to be students. Maybe they're smaller. I don't know.
Yeah, and flexible. Careful and probably engineers too. They'll figure out ways to make every little cubic centimeter take up some part of some person.
I take it. I hope they don't actually move the PRT from one station to another with 96 people crammed in it. They get in and then they get out like a phone booth or something. That's what I hope.
Yeah, I think it's sort of a static test. They don't want to be moving around with that many students.
But if you go to University of West Virginia or West Virginia University?
WVU, West Virginia University.
Okay, I'm sorry. West Virginia University. If you go to West Virginia University at Morgantown and you have ridden this thing, or you are going to that university and you will ride this thing, please write to us and share that experience, otw@2600.com. Yeah, I'd like to go back to Morgantown sometime and ride the thing. Unfortunately, on Sunday, it doesn't run on Sundays. But there are all kinds of other things about this town that I think would be interesting to explore.
And the route, we don't know exactly what ends of the campus. We didn't get to actually ride the system, so tell us all about it. We're curious. We would have paid whatever the fare was. I thought I read it was something like 50 cents, like incredibly cheap, and and in maintaining it, it hasn't been because the track itself is concrete. It sort of becomes this permanent structure. It's relatively affordable for them to maintain. Thus, the cost from per ride is really, really approachable for students and explorers like us.
I heard it was free for students, but I might be wrong.
See, that makes sense. Even if it is. Free for them, and the public would have to pay. I still think it would be worth a trip on whatever the rate it is. That's so incredibly affordable for what it does in that particular town. It's a very hilly town. The contours, the terrain, it would make something like this practical for those who are not in vehicles.
And something else cool that happened in Morgantown, literally the day before we got there. The first ever in West Virginia medical marijuana dispensary opened right there in Morgantown.
Incredible. Yeah. And this means that patients, veterans, older folks, people who have chronic illnesses, they can seek out and use cannabis for whatever it is and safely access it in town, in one of the places we've been talking about throughout this trip. So that is really interesting and timely, considering it just opened. And we also noticed a lot of things possibly happening in Oklahoma with regard to cannabis. It's sort of not there yet in as many ways as we would imagine, but there are lots of medical places. And what was really interesting about how that came about is that your physician, whoever gives you that medical exception, does not have to cite a specific reason. They can simply issue you your prescription and will allow you to get on with your day. So there's a lot of allowance for the entrance into this medicine and nutritional field that has been mostly underground, and that is so important for people who don't otherwise have safe ways to access it, or they're not involved in any kind of underground or black market. They're able to seek it out and find it, and also have a discussion with their doctor about it, which I think is really helpful. And these are really small steps that will go towards making it more effective. I know Oklahoma is actually also got two bills, one to reform the medical rules and system as they have it, but also to do full recreational for, I believe, 21 and up, and then that might be on the ballot next year.
Yeah, you know, so we have been, as we travel across the country, we've been sort of checking out the states and seeing how they're different, and Kentucky has nothing. No medical, no recreational, stiff penalties if you're caught with anything. But West Virginia, still no recreational, but it there has been some progress with medical. We see this as a stepping stone, and throughout the nation we see it as a stepping stone. The attitudes are changing, the laws are changing, it's evolution, and it's really been fascinating. I have some exciting news. We're in New Jersey.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible.
I've never been so happy to be in New Jersey, because we're that much closer to home, and this is our final leg of the trip. We've bounced all over the country from one small town to another, and it's been so invigorating and fascinating, and a lot of the worries I had simply never came to fruition. I've been trying to eat healthy. Never had a problem with that. There are always vegan options. There are always good salad. I had the best salad of my life, I think, in Oklahoma City. We just stopped in a place, and I think it was a brewery. We just had some food and some drink, and it was just incredible. It was really great. And so many places like that. And, you know, you expect that in a big city, but when you find it in a small town, it means so much more. And I'm very, very hopeful with just people in general, how we communicate, how we can find common ground on various things. And I don't feel the same divisiveness that I felt when I started this. I know there is divisiveness, I know there is disagreement, but I think a lot of that is fueled by people with agendas, namely people who host divisive radio and television shows, or politicians, or just out-and-out fascist, or, you know, whatever you want to say. But the actual people, when you get to talking to people and overhearing their conversations, they're not that dissimilar from what you're used to. The accents are different, the details are different, but I think we're all pretty much playing the same game, and we have the same desires and laugh at the same things. I know that people in these small areas are fascinated by the places we come from. Whenever we said we're from New York, we're from Seattle, they wanted to hear more. We need to do the same thing for those people, because it's worth hearing more about where they come from, what they do, what they've experienced, their lives, their families. It's fascinating. If we had more of that, I think we'd have less of the crap we've been dealing with over the years. That's what I learned, just going from place to place over 10 days. And I got to say, it was awesome, Kyle. Awesome.
I concur. I had a lot of interesting experiences and heard a lot. And that was so true. Just the conversations you know are going on, you're so often told in a lot of those contexts where there's an agenda of sorts, that these conversations aren't happening, that people are rejecting what you might be passionate or feel strongly about out of hand, and that you don't belong. And that's not true at all. In many of these small places, or the places we call like sort of in between, or that we fly over, not on this trip, by the way, those places are having and grappling with as many of the day-to-day issues, social issues. They have young people in their families who are going off maybe to school or to explore other parts of the country, and bringing back all kinds of social quirks and stories and dynamics and dilemmas, just like we face. And that is something you have got to remember, that people are confronting these things with their own humor and their own sort of local perspective, and that, you know, you can't go someplace and expect, well, it hasn't changed yet, so it's invalid in some way. That's bad. That's not good territory. We need to be open and listening as much as people are open and welcome the sort of weary travelers that we were throughout this. But I certainly would really love to thank every community that we were able to visit and all of the people there. Definitely want to thank all the safe driving truckers out there. There were a lot of them. Our highway system, the stuff has been maintained. We had a lot of twists and turns on this route. I'm sure we'll make a map someday somehow, E, but it worked. We were able to navigate, and we did not get into any difficulty. There wasn't any hazards that we couldn't overcome. So I'm really thankful we're in New Jersey and safe so far.
Yeah, as a truck almost broadsides me because there's an entrance ramp here. You know, when Kyle says the highway system, it's not just the interstate. It's federal roads, U.S. Routes, and state roads, and county roads. We were on a lot of two-lane highways because that's how you visit places. Just staying on the interstate, you won't see very much. So while we're on an interstate right now, because this is the home stretch, many times we weren't. Most of the times we weren't, and that was pretty amazing. That was pretty awesome. I just want this truck to pass me. It's kind of unnerving as I'm driving. I don't know what you call the kind of traveling we did. I think there should be a name for it, whether it's small town travel or I don't know. Somebody maybe can come up with a good name for it. One of the many people who wrote into us suggesting places to go, thank you to everybody who did that. But we really do suggest, if you want to see America, don't just go from one city to another and see the sights. Pick a place. Pick a place that looks like it's in the middle of nowhere. Drive there or take a train there or just figure out a way to move around. And I guarantee you'll get so much more out of it, and you'll get something that no one else will have gotten out of it too. So you'll have a truly unique adventure.
And the budget motels, the places to stay, there are so many options. You have so many options. There's in virtually every place there is a some place you can stop. You know what, when you're asking like what to call it, I'm thinking of a style of bicycle riding called randonneuring, and it's basically traveling and camping and going on longer bicycle rides. This was kind of a similar type thing. It was a long trek, stopping in various places just simply to rest and continue on our journey, but also take in what was there and what was along the way. So that spirit, I think, was present all along this really incredible trip.
Well, I look forward to crossing over Manhattan onto Long Island. By the way, we have a rental car, I didn't really talk to him about how to pay tolls. I think what happens, there's an option where you can pay a daily fee, and for that daily fee, I don't know what you get for the daily fee exactly, because you still have to pay the toll. I think what you get is not getting a penalty for when you go through a toll booth and they get billed later. Neither one of those really works that well, because we're only paying one toll, which is going into Manhattan over the Hudson River. That's a hard one to avoid. I think you might be able to avoid it if you go all the way up to the top of New York State, cross over, and come all the way back down. Not going to do that. But I think there's a cash lane in the Lincoln Tunnel and on the GW Bridge. And if we cross over the Hudson that way and pay in cash, we can simply cross over the East River on one of the free bridges, and that's the only toll we will have had to pay. It will be in cash, so there won't be any penalty on the rental car, and I think that'll work. And the total amount is about $15. That's for the entire country, so that's not a bad deal. And also, speaking of good deals, yeah, Kyle's right. The cheap motels we stayed at were all very accommodating. In fact, we stayed, 10 nights? Every single time, we had a refrigerator and a microwave. Every single time. Didn't matter how cheap the motel was. Could have been $50 a night. That now apparently is standard, so that's really cool to see as well. Everybody was very, very accommodating, except, they were coming to us, but Elizabethtown, I believe it was, don't try bringing a cat to the Super 8 Motel. They have signs everywhere saying no cats, absolutely no cats, no exception. If you bring a cat in here, you will regret it. I don't know what happened with a cat at the Super 8 in Elizabethtown in Kentucky. It might be a story there. Dogs are welcome, but not cats. We didn't have any cats, fortunately, this time.
Yes, yes, indeed. No cats were on this journey. Thankfully, especially when it was late and we needed to check in and recoup. Also, we did all right with speeding. No tickets. Didn't get pulled over. What police were working in this country, they left us alone.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Kyle. I stopped to drive through New Jersey and all of Long Island, and you just put the whammy on it, so I'll probably get pulled over. As long as we're attempting fate here, not once have we had to use the horn. Not once has anyone used a horn against us. And looking at the odometer here, I see we've put on over 4,000 miles on this vehicle. So those are no small accomplishments.
I don't think the police are working in Nassau, New Jersey, or any other part of the tri-state area. They've all taken the year off. Is there anything else you'd like to leave our listeners with before we wrap things up here?
No, I just hope that that you got something out of this as well. I really enjoyed it. I learned so much. And we benefited a lot from listener feedback as well. So please, any observations that you'd like to share with us, by all means, write in otw@2600.com. We'd love to hear from you and share your experiences.
I enjoyed myself. I got a lot of cannabis smoking in, which I can do, but...
They said police reported ahead as soon as you said that. As soon as you said that you did a lot of cannabis smoking, Waze said there's police ahead. So she's warning you. She's looking out for you.
I was up to the task. It would have been nice to just pace myself and have one amount to work from. But hey, you know what? I'm flexible. And that was a thrill. It's just having kind of... nothing really pulling us in any one place was freeing. It was also a bit scary. It left so much open, and that, I think, helped us plot such an interesting route. I don't know if there was more things to do or less things to do. Would it have been better or not? No, it was just the way it was, and I'm just so thankful that we made it. We were safe, and... I don't know if I'm going to say I want to do it again, but I would definitely bring this experience to planning another trip, perhaps with a couple longer stops in there, maybe revisiting some things, visiting some people when it's more of a safe and, when we can be more social on such a journey. But this was a really great way to see what's going on in the country and... to see how active things are and to just get out there and see people without being in really close proximity. So I had a lot of fun.
At the very least, we know more about these places that we've spent some time in. And I like to think that we've brought some knowledge to those people as well, people we talked to about New York, about Seattle, about various places we've been, about who we are. So I think every time you do that, it's a plus.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and it was enriching and was I think something that we're left better for it, and hopefully people got something out of this small little group of road tripping folks, and we went to places I went to places I've never been, never thought I would go. So that I think is the true magic of it.
And there you go. Our trip is over. this special three-hour edition of Off the Wall. And if you're not sick of us by now, maybe we can make you sick of us in the remaining minutes that we have. But, boy, what an amazing trip it was. Spoiler alert, we didn't get any tickets on the way through New Jersey, Manhattan, or Long Island. Nobody used their horn. Even in Manhattan, nobody used their horn against us. And we paid the toll successfully. And there was another toll. We didn't forget about the one in Oklahoma, but that was avoidable. The one in Manhattan was not.
Yeah, the vehicle was returned. The trek ends eventually. But I only repeated myself twice. I was really keen on getting that message out about Oklahoma's cannabis stuff. But the point is that we were trying to remember so many things and not forget something that we wanted to mention that was interesting. And New Mexico's got other cool stuff going on with that recreational stuff. Anyway.
I don't know why I had such trouble with Elizabethtown, but do you know there's a major film called Elizabethtown, and it's about that Elizabethtown? It's called Elizabethtown. I should be able to remember this. And it's got, you know, pretty much an all-star cast. It's got Orlando Bloom and Kirsten Dunst and Alec Baldwin and Susan Sarandon. It received generally negative reviews. It's a 28% approval rating, so I doubt I'll be seeing that anytime soon. But yeah, Elizabethtown, it's a film. Also some facts about Owensboro. You did get the name right of that other town in Kentucky. It was 1936 when they had the last public hanging in the United States. So that's one of the negative things that place is known for. But as we mentioned, for some reason we had good seafood there.
There are chilling reminders when you do go through these places of like, oh yes, this is America. You're thrust into those moments.
Yeah, it's not all peaches and unicorns. It's you know, you have to look at all the history, whether it's oppression of Native people or African Americans or just general ignorance and hatred. That can exist everywhere. You have to look at all of it.
I think even zealotry and righteousness and you know, struggles we're still facing to this day about whatever the interest or hot button thing is. But the point I think is you can find coffee anywhere in America.
That is certainly true. That is certainly true. And also another addendum to what we were talking about, the PRT CRAM. I know we're going to get a lot of letters about this. That's the Personal Rapid Transit System of Morgantown, West Virginia, on campus there. The PRT CRAM, it takes place as part of Mountaineering Week. And, of course, we know when that is. It's the first week of November, usually.
I said welcome, but it's fine. You know, that's highly specific.
You said welcome what?
Like welcome week.
Mountaineering Week is a very welcome
week. That's pretty late in the back to school.
I think they're team is called the Mountaineers.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah,
so it's
they call
a,
them the Ears, E-E-R-S.
Oh, the Ears.
Yeah,
yeah, of course.
So, yeah, we saw the sign saying go Ears. It kind of didn't seem to make sense to us, but now it does. But the PRT CRAM for the second year in a row had to be shoved aside, as the headline says, because of the pandemic. So I guess shoving 90 people inside this vehicle that's meant to hold 20 probably isn't the best thing to do in the middle of a global pandemic. So good for them for realizing that.
If they're all getting like vaccines while they're being crammed in, maybe that...
I don't think that's what would be happening. Okay. I don't think so. Yes, Finn will be back next week. Bill Darling's coming up at 9 o'clock. And we will have our regular one-hour show next week at 6 o'clock.
I could hardly tell it was longer than an hour. I mean, it was so... so uplifting. I hope it wasn't too uplifting
for
people.
I mean, you don't have to listen to all of it at once, but that's probably the wrong time to tell people at the end of the 3 hours that they could, you know, download it and listen to it in sections. But maybe some people were able to stomach all of it. You know, we did the driving all the way across the United States, so that took a lot of time.
And you're welcome. We were in such a good mood every time we pulled out the tape, the recording device to get some audio for you. So, yes, you came with us. And we were happy to be as excited about America as we were.
If you got something out of this, out of the last 3 hours, please show your support to WUSB, because it is the inspiration that keeps us going, that allows us to broadcast things like this. We wouldn't be recording this if we didn't have a place to air it. What would be the point in that? Call 631-632-6901. You can leave a voicemail with your information, have somebody call you back and take the particulars down. Or you can go to the website, wusb.fm, and click on the pledge button and fill out the form. And you can get all kinds of premiums, too, if you so choose. And please mention that Off the Wall is the show that you're listening to. And if you already pledged and forgot to do that, you can always email us at otw@2600.com so that we can say, hey, look, there's another person who pledged and pledged in the name of Off the Wall. And then we'll get a nod of approval. And that means a lot to us. It really does. But you can also write to us at otw@2600.com just to give us your feedback. Tell us what you thought of this special presentation. It really was something. The whole trip from beginning to end, and I mean from the beginning when we ventured out to Chicago by train, it was magical, educational, inspirational, and I look forward to doing more crazy things like that.
Absolutely. After not having been around the rest of the world for so long, getting out there, striking out there, and seeing stuff and things and activity, it really made me feel optimistic for the future.
We were able to stay safe. We put our mask on when we thought it was appropriate, and when it wasn't, we simply lived normally. People were great to us, never really felt in danger or in hostile environments, just maybe somewhat of a curiosity stood out a little bit, and that's kind of what we expected. America is an interesting place. People are generally really great, and it was a pleasure meeting so many and seeing so many interesting things and locations. All right, that's it for us. Emmanuel and Kyle, bidding you good night, and please let us know of your travels and your adventures.
Take a trip.
Yes. All right, stay tuned to WUSB Stony Brook. We'll see you next week. Good night.
Well, we're done.